good morning. It is exactly 1 minute before 8, and this meeting is declared open. I am the chairperson of this committee. My name is Masizole Ngasela. Ngobenzikela phake mayuthi umane kuze ba ngumni and that I can recommend kuku so much that. Ndafumana ukhona naba nomakuti bapha. So ndawenza umcimbi ke ubona beqhuquzela ayo department le izabe nomakuti. Everything has been lost in the translation. I'm breaking the minister that whilst I was greeting, I realized that based on my clan name and my authority vested in me, based on that, there are some of the ladies who qualify to be women who must be working next to the crawl and deal with the pots and what they're preparing for men, some good food. So that is the traditional custom. I can't do anything about it. But that will not be a meeting of the department. It will be Amat Krineb, which is my clan, having their own ceremony. But you won't be invited then. Yes. So welcome to the minister, honorable members, HOD, and all the senior executives and the entire team of the local government family. I think I can see this family now, how big it is. It's probably one of the lead departments where you've got so many officials in one meeting attending their own annual report, and for that, thank you very much. We're looking at a great opportunity here where we'll be dealing with the 2017-18 annual report. Minister, I've gone through the report, and I must say right from the outset, before I take it to the next level, I want to congratulate you and your team, HOD, even right from the person that is having the lowest pay in the department, for having delivered a clean audit as a department. So that is not something easy to keep the books clean, because the money that comes in must be measured based on the money that goes out. And to be able to achieve that, and especially when you look after the municipalities and you have to work with them, you must lead by example. I saw the AP having more than 700 million rands on irregular expenditure, and they said, no, we forgot to look after us whilst we're looking at everybody else. I'm glad that you did not forget to look after yourself, so that you are able to mirror yourself and start with the person on the mirror before you start next door. So thank you very much for that. We often say the fish must not be thanked for swimming. That's a fact. But the reality is we see so many fishes that end up not swimming. So we need to thank the good culture of accountability and obviously good fiscal controls. I think those sound fiscal controls are welcome. I'm going to request honorable members to introduce themselves, and then I'll come over to yourself, Minister, and then you can give us your overview after that. Honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Tesha Summers.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Anela Hena.
Good morning, Chair. What do you
think? I'm close. Hey, that's classic. I thought you were going to say, I'm still sorry, so.
Minister. I'm Dr. Dell, responsible
for local government. Good morning, Greg Bolton, head of department. Good morning, Honorable Members. Albert Rose, policy and strategy.
Good morning, Colin Donner, disaster management and fire services.
Good morning, Partner Silasin, finance.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Maurice Brown from local government.
Good morning, Kenneth Kluter, local government.
Morning, members. Kamal McCann, Director of Municipal Governance.
Good morning, Honourable Members.
Ira Bagna. Local government.
And at the Clark, legislation support.
Good morning, Boyce Samulale, policy strategy.
Good morning, Alicia Bowdy, Policy and Strategy.
Good morning, Marupin Mitral of Policy and Strategy.
Morning, Rowena Kelly, Communication.
Good morning, Tobela Mirehe, Municipal Government.
Good morning, Vanelle Muchoko, Vanelle Muchoko.
Good morning, Mary Wanma, Specialized Support.
Good morning,
Ezra Nolan, Municipal Support.
Good morning, Honorable Minister Sandra Khair, Municipal Support.
Good morning, Honorable Member Hakim Masali, Performance Management.
Good morning, Sia Bongamuel, Performance Monitor.
Good morning, Jackie Pandarum, Disaster Management.
Good morning, everybody. Heinrich Macherman, Community Development Worker Program.
Good morning, Moweni, Mornay Victoria, Service Delivery Integration.
Good morning, members. Greg Mitchell, Public Participation.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Walton Carlson, Integrated Development Planning.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Lugo Gozamkata, Integrated Development Planning.
Thank you very much. And as I would tell that because there are other people sitting afar, may I start with yourself, sir?
Good morning, everybody. Vernon Francis, Corporate Services Centre, People Management.
Good morning, Kofima Aydin, Auditor General.
Good morning, Thurston Marini, Provincial Treasury.
Morning, Tomaso Lecciali, Provincial Treasury.
Good morning, Warren Wilson, Department of the Premier, People Management.
Okay. You don't introduce yourself. Why? Yeah, come through. Your name is important. It's okay, you can't be embarrassed with your media group there.
Whitey Wilkinson, the voice of the Cape.
Thank you, thank you.
So you're from Malita from the weekend out.
Okay. This side, please.
Adams Copeland.
Good morning. Good morning, I am from Montoya Integrated
Services. Good morning,
Vanessa
Olsen,
Finance.
Good morning, Charles Corbin,
Local Gov, Finance.
Good morning, Lafayette Island, Disaster Management.
Alright. Now everybody had an opportunity to say something this morning. You can't say I didn't speak. That was a great exercise, so that you say you spoke in Parliament, you know. I told those MPs there. It's important, because if you don't tell us, you won't hear. I saw Minister there in 10 years, right? So we are all welcome, and I wish to see you sitting here in the place of the HOD in future. So that's how you must dream, eh? Welcome, Minister Obati.
Thank you, Chairperson. A jaar geleden was ons damme min of meer op 36% vol. Dit het gedaal na tot 16%. En toe het ons gelukkig een goeie winterreen seisoen gekry, waar ons vandag staan aan die Kaapse damme op 75%, gemiddelde damme in die Weskaap op 66%. I want to make use of this opportunity to thank each and every one that help us, that participated in saving water, managing the systems, doing their bit to help us to pull through, because I really think it was collective effort. At a certain stage, in the beginning of the drought, there was a lot of blame, and we moved past that and worked together to pull us through, so thank you for that. Now, we must also remember that the drought do have a big impact on sectors like the economy and especially the agricultural sector. Especially the agricultural sector is a long term. They don't just recover within a year or two. Then on a technical front, the department will keep on supporting our municipalities and will keep on building capacity within our municipalities. You just can't replace a water system overnight. It's an ongoing system.
The reality is that we will, climate change, its effect and ongoing population growth is another issue that's ongoing factor, and we as government will need to plan better in the future, and we will need to keep on building not only water infrastructure but all our health services. I also want to make use of this opportunity to congratulate the team here, and especially I think from disaster management, but also every single person helping to get the plans ready and so forth. And I want to thank national government for allocating 974 million rand to this province for the previous year's storms and the fires of Naisna, the drought and so forth. But we must understand these things don't just happen. It was a huge effort to get the plans, to get the applications in and to prices. So again, thank you to all the role players. Also, I think we can be really grateful for the building of the Clay Medium Dam that's going to continue. And I really hope that our interaction and open door policy with national minister will help us also to extend the capacity of other dams within the province. Then, Honourable Chairperson, the year under review was the first full year for governance within the municipalities after the 2016 elections. The councils were accordingly provided with ongoing training to ensure that they are better able to perform their duties. These training initiatives done in partnerships with institutions like the University of Stellenbosch, the Hanselaer Foundation, and also SALVA played a role within the training. We continue to expand our Tucson program as a hub for poverty reduction, job creation, and broad-based community development. And again, I think those members in Parliament who touch base with the Tucson program will agree that it's a fantastic program. Yes, we will always look out to better, and we've got the personnel has got a passion to drive that program. For the year under review, 1.3 million government services and information were accessed by citizens through the Tucson Center Services. 1.3 million people, where I think that we plant a seed of hope within those communities and people, and especially out on our rural areas, our remote areas, it's very important that we do create hope and do get our people to feel part of the Music of Africa, and again I think the program has done great. By the end of the financial year, the Tucson Center, the community development program, has provided support to 70 small-scale initiatives aimed at providing access to economic opportunities across our province. During the year under review, the Ward Committee Handbook was translated into Braille in all three official languages of the Western Cape, and I think it's something that we can be very proud of. And we've also made it available to other provinces, so it's in all the libraries, and it was the first in the country, so congratulations to the whole team, and I really hope that we will build on the success and realize that we also need to create opportunities for people that need that help. And as far as speaker, ons informele nederzetting, informal settlements, we know that one of the big issues there is the fires within informal settlements. I think Cal Fire and we've got a very good plan. It's under control, but the problem is still with informal settlements. And the reason is it's how they've been built, and then also to our reaction time to the fires there. And I think the smoke alarm is something that we can brag about, and I think the smoke alarm has over the last couple of years has saved also a lot of lives. I am not aware of any lives lost in the areas where you put in the smoke alarms. So I think the program that we will need to push very hard and get our municipalities to support, because we need to get that in each informal settlement. And what's important in this project is that it doesn't help you do 4, 5, or 10 shacks in the informal, you must do the whole informal settlement. That's part of the success. So we need to keep on with that program. First, the 2016 local government elections, the department provided ongoing administration and legal assistance to municipalities
also with regards to appointments of senior management managers, the department assessed the compliance of these appointments with the relevant legislative prescripts. And again, I think new legislation will also put a bigger burden on this department because we will really have a say because they won't be able to sign contracts before we sign off on the applications. In some councils, there were the ugly head of corruption stuck out. We've sent in the walks, laid charges in those councils. We push very hard, but we need to also realize that as a government and as politicians, we need to stake out that. As soon as you hand it over to the walks, we need to let them do their work. And yeah, we want to get the report much quicker, but that system is ongoing. Building from previous experience and guided by legislation, the department provided support to councillors to effectively execute their roles and responsibility. One such support initiative was the councillor training program. A total of 395 councillors participated in this program. Following the establishment of new councils, the department also supported municipalities in enhancing public participation and strengthening the interface between communities and municipalities. Various initiatives, including the establishment of formal participatory structures such as ward committees, were implemented to institutionalize public participation in our municipalities. Seeing what's going out there, going out on the ground, on the ground, we realized that we need to put a bigger effort in public participation, talking to the communities and getting them to understand the functioning of our municipalities. The department started a civic education program on public participation with the aim of educating and empowering citizens with information that will enable them to participate meaningfully in the affairs of local government. And I know that one of my colleagues here has got some videos or DVDs in his bag to hand out to the committee members later, and I can really encourage you to look at that. I think it's a great project. It's our responsibility to educate the communities how municipality function and what can they expect from their government. Of our speaker, the initiative kom meer op een reeks opvoedkundige video's en hopelijk sal die lede van die staande komitee ook waarde daarin vind. Then there was the Back to Basics program, very good program that we work on, and we even managed to get some of the municipalities out of the Back to Basics program. Then the department for the year end had around about 82 goals. We achieved 77 of that goals. We managed to support our municipalities. Out of 30 municipalities, 21 received key audits. The old story that team orders don't speak directly to service delivery. I will keep on pushing that it should, because if you don't manage your finances properly, you will have nothing left to fight about or to argue about or to debate about in councils. Chairperson, the department continues to implement the long-term water approach to ensure resilience of the province given the predicted impact on climate change. And I think this theme of resilience and sustainability going forward is going to become more and more important for this department as well as my other departments, because if we don't design resilient, sustainable cities, we get always going to play catch up. We're never going to get ahead of poverty and unemployment in our province. The Provincial Disaster Management Center has also developed the Western Cape Drought Risk Atlas, which is a web-based tool containing a variety of data sets relevant to the drought. We believe it will make a big difference moving forward. Ek wil daarmee afsluit, sê vir baie dankie, en ek dink die departement is goed voorberei, we prepared well to field hopefully all your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I will now request the HOD to open the mic. Is there anything to say to the committee?
Good morning, just perhaps one or two things. I
think the year under review has been extremely challenging and difficult year for the entire party. I think the draft and related dictators officers in the province, and it was a number simultaneously, have significant tested the capacity and the way with all of the departments. It has been challenging, it has been difficult, and I think we had to balance our efforts, our energy, and the budgets in relation to the draft, ensuring that not a single town runs out of water, but also focusing on the APPD donors, ensuring that we achieve that. So it has been difficult, it has been challenging, but notwithstanding that, as Minister has indicated, the team has done well. From the outset, I want to say thank you very much for the entire team, for their commitment, for their dedication and their passion, those here in the room today, but also those back in the office and those in the regions. It has been a pleasure working with them, and the fact of the matter that we've achieved most of our deliverables, some partly, otherwise some overachievements, but in conclusion it has been a difficult day. I do want to say, Chairperson, the previous committee clerk is her birthday today, Annika Clark, and congratulations on her birthday today. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to sing for you, but I can say happy birthday. She is now referred to as Dr. Clark. Yeah, I'm just telling the members of the committee that's an achievement, Honorable Judge. That's an achievement. And before I hand over to the honorable members, HOT, I don't know how well you know, but and Minister, the committee coordinator, Johan, here next to me, was not well for some time, and he had a life-changing experience. I remember when I visited him in hospital, he was lying there in bed saying, "Chair, is it you?" I think he mistaken that in the committee room. But he had a successful surgery, he is now back with us. So that's how God can be, and that's how life can be. I think we are grateful that you had a successful surgery. And welcome, sir. Yes. I'm now going to hand over to honorable members. Honorable Inanna, Honorable Simmons, in that order. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. With the forward to the Minister and AJP has given. But right from the outset, Chairperson, let me just also congratulate the department for achieving the mission. We always say that whenever there is an achievement, it's because of the collective responsibility by the people, the staff that are in that department. So you may attract the criticism from many quarters, but at the end of the day, somebody notices your performance and helps you attain this consecutive yearly in, yearly out, that indeed you are responsible in the department. Thank you very much. The other congratulations, Chairperson, that I want to highlight is the availability of the braille for the disabled people. The disabled people are always the sector that is very, very stigmatized, that is not taken care of. There are no efforts, there are no finances that are done towards that people to recognize that they are part of our community. So when the department takes that responsibility to make the availability of tools for them to understand what is happening in various departments, that we congratulate you. Thank you very much for that. Chairperson, what is being mentioned repeatedly by various departments, and including the one that has been presented to by the HOD and the NDC, is the question of drought. That we are confronted by the drought, we almost nearly got to be having no water at all. But mechanisms and plans were done in order to combat it. But I just want to check with the department. One of the issues that was raised during the issue of the drought was the failure of getting financial assistance from national. Because
The National Department has got the responsibility of supplying or giving the Department of Municipalities the financial injection. Has that been done? Because I see and acknowledge that the Williams Dam, the capacity to collect water has been improved in that process. We just want to know how much was pumped in, was given to the municipality so that we can build the Williams Dam. And what are other dams as well? Because in the Western Cape, we're not only having the Williams Dam, but the number of them that are providing water across the provinces. What is other issues with those dams? Is there anything that's been done in order to improve the capacity to hold water so that the municipalities can receive it? Chairperson, the complaints that the department received from the members of the community about the roles of the municipalities and councillors is something that also contributes to the protest marches that are happening, because many people, when they do the protest, are complaining about the role that the municipalities are doing and the failure by the councillors to inform them of what are the issues of service delivery. Now, if there are complaints, I just want to get the clarity from the department of what kind of information did they convey to the members of the community, so that with the engagement with the municipalities and councillors, they know what is happening. The communities don't know even the allocation pattern. Many of them, they don't know the responsibility of the councillor, that there is the amount of money that has been allocated in order to improve the quality of life in their world. And yet there are municipalities. If there is any education that is being shared and information with the community, can we get the direction of what is it that the department did in order to inform the members of the community? This is the responsibility of the council. This is the responsibility of the municipality. In order for you to understand what must be done by the municipality, these are the challenges and information that must come. So if we can get that information shared by the members of the community, as we can. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Imam. Honourable Stimas.
Dank u voor het voorzitter. Ik denk dat we net die minister in die departement een club op je schouder geven, want weet die omgeving waar we, die fiscale omgeving waar we ons functioneren, is het bijna moeilijk om schoon audits te krijgen. Zo hebben we weer in de minister in het departement gelukt. Elkaar zei dat in de Indische versie of vragen. Just ook een congratulations to the department for accomplishing a clean audit, because given the fiscal environment that you guys need to perform, and I think it's remarkable to still achieve a clean audit, specifically the sphere of local government, to the minister. Minister, you referred to, you know, building towns and cities that are resilient and that can be sustainable. You also referred to the drought risk atlas. Now, you said it's an online application that can be utilized. On page 9, Minister, the first paragraph of your foreword, you refer to developed plans and strategies to prevent water shortages. Now, Minister, we have seen successfully plans being developed to assist the city of Cape Town and also portions of the West region. But my concern is, Minister, if you look at the eastern region of the Western Cape, more specifically the central Karoo, in the Yarandi River, you have visited Kannaland, you visited Oudtshoorn, you visited Beaufort West, where literally the shortage of water is becoming a massive concern. Some of these areas are experiencing the worst drought in more than 70 years at the moment. and I know you also, when I asked you a question, Minister, earlier this year regarding water plans and when municipalities have started to update their water plans, because we need to become proactive, not reactive. My concern is, Minister, my question to you is, given the reality of climate change, and that most of the central Karoo municipalities are reactive, not proactive, and given that they're experiencing the worst drought in 70 years nearly now, moving forward, how will the department seek to assist them? Because capacity is one of the issues why they can't review their water plans. How are you going to assist them from your side, Minister? Because water unlocks the economy, and we've seen also an increase in unemployment in specific the central Karoo area. That's my question to you, Minister. Then to the HLD, on page 11 of your overview, HLD, the bottom part, left-hand side, you refer to the appointment of senior management, the assessments to see if, you know, if municipalities and councils are complying to their own processes. You do highlight in exceptional cases of non-compliance. But now I have another question for you. Are there exceptional cases within the norm or for the grey area that exists in certain legislation where councils have sought to deviate from their own processes, using legal recourse and legal methods to try and persuade your department to sign off on senior managers and directors that they've been appointed, which is in contradiction to the outcome of their own processes? That's the only question. Thank you.
Honorable Janji, thanks, Honorable Stimas.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to follow the colleagues, I've got quite a number of questions that I'd want to pose to the Minister and the HOD. But maybe before one does that, to create a context and a different congratulations to the Minister. This is going to be your last annual report after 10 years in charge of this department. It was in eight months' time we're likely to see the change of government in this province. And for that, I do want to congratulate you for what you have done. We are going to get into digging into that legacy in this report. And because they are last annual report before our election, so one has taken a special interest to be better today than previously. To an extent that I will be joining you, Minister, to Scopa today. I don't normally do that. So I thought I must just say that up front, and I'm joining you because I'm following certain things. But maybe let me ask the last question that I want to ask the Minister before I go to the details. And because this is your last annual report, I thought I would want you to share at least one thing, and this is where I want you to brag, at least one thing, because there are not many of them, one thing that you think you've done very well as the MEC for local government in this department, in this financial year, in your last 10 years, but at least share three things that you know, these are the worst of things. I'm saying three because there are many. So if you could do that, Minister. I then want to go to the detailed questions. So when, Minister, you're saying your collective efforts and yielded positive results in the water crisis, certainly you know where I stand on that. We've been here together in the House. I hope when you talk about collective effort, you're not referring also to the role that I said in Musi Maimane wanted to be a premier and a mayor in the province when you are present. I hope that's not part of the collective effort you're referring to. And you say you on the issue of whether the municipalities were the municipal council is an important enabler to ensure service delivery happens in the municipality. In relation to the water crisis that we have just gone through, which is still under, do you still refer to such municipalities as an enabler, and especially the city of Cape Town, because I don't see it as an enabler in the role that it has played, especially on the water crisis? You then go further to say, which is something I think the department must be applauded for, that you have produced what you call the practice note. Of course, here you're referring to practice notes, but at page 36, number 14, we know there was only one practice note and not notes. I think it is important that you just share with us, and I would have been interested if the department would have brought at least a copy of that practice note to share with us what is intended in this practice note. Is this worth the money that was spent on it? Or it's one of those things where you create a booklet and just collect everything else that we know exists. Because we are looking for new answers. Is this practice note having some new answers in it? If you can, it would be important. And then on the Braille, which I also think is an important achievement, you happen to be the first in the country. On that, I'm interested, how is whatever that you have produced, how is or has it been distributed? One, and have you checked the use of it? Is there demand for this Braille? Or you produced it without the research, and this is kind of a Braille that is going to be there and be in the shelf and nobody's going to use it. The level of demand, one would be interested in it, in terms of whether you have quantified that. You also, in the achievement, you point to the kind of role that the call to save water. We sit here currently knowing that a lot of communities, especially in the city of Cape Town, are burdened by huge debts as part of these high water tariffs and so on, and the specific cases around that. I don't know if I heard you correctly. You said the national government gave you 900 million for the drought. You mentioned 900 million in your input. I would be interested if you can just elaborate on that. And then the smoke alarms. Firstly, you mentioned the rate in the informal settlements in relation to the 2 minutes. Have you done any research in terms of your formal settlements? But also, if you could, are you able to tell us, maybe HOD, the cost of smoke alarms? What does it come to, especially people from on the disaster side? I will just now focus on the names, because I don't know if I must also put the HOD together as part of this. I've got quite a lot. Or should I just focus on the minister now? Your guidance will be helpful.
This is now your opportunity, honourable member. So you must fight as much as you can.
Thank you very much. And then to the HOD, there is an issue of non-compliance of senior manager appointments in municipalities. I'm interested if you could mention to us which were the exceptional cases. Are you able to give us a few examples of those? Because in the annual report it doesn't really detail which of those municipalities and what positions those are. You speak about the total 395 councillors that participated in the training. I guess you're speaking about, is that since they were elected or just the period under review? I also want you to, and in those non-compliances, would the Cape Winelands district be part of those? Because there are specific things we raised with the minister in relation to the Cape Winelands. And then you've got 50 million under expenditure, which, this being the last annual report, minister, that's the biggest that you have ever. And I'm sure you're sitting there worried, because you're not worried, that's fine. We will deal with that. If you're not worried about 50 million not spent in a drought year, when there's a problem of water, because the bulk of that relates to that. We will get into those details as we go page by page. Because you're speaking about things that were earmarked, and I'm interested what was this that was earmarked that you could not spend on. Further down, it's broken down in terms of that 10 million and the 3.8 million, and we'll get to the details when we get to that point. On the departmental receipts, what was the reason HOD for the disposal of assets and other financial transactions which led to the over-collection of 1 million? If you could help just explain that. And I've already dealt with the 15 million under expenditure. Is this something that you could not foresee at all as a department? And if you did foresee, what did you do? Because we're sitting with 15 million not spent. I will pause for now, Chair.
All right. Thank you, honourable member. I guess, Minister and HOD, you've taken notes and will be able to respond as you prepare to do so. My particular interest is on the number of copies that were printed on the brain. The number of copies that were printed. And whether you've covered the entire province or you started in some areas. The other area is the what Honorable Kianti raised on the smoke alarms. My question really on the specifics around that is whether or not there's an intention, a deliberate intention to get municipalities to buy into this program so that they themselves are able to invest in that space. It was the 8,000 where you've seen the success. It's an anecdote of what the situation could be in an attempt to save lives in the informal settlements. It's always painful when we hear there's a fire in informal settlements because we now wait in a bated breath whether there will be stories about people dying, and there's always the case that when there's a fire in the sheds, people die in those informal settlement fires. But with this intervention, we know, as much as you know, that this saves lives tremendously. That is why then my question in ensuring that municipalities are able to invest in that space, also the private sector, because workers, they live in areas where they are not necessarily able to wake up the next day and go to work. And if that happens, if people die in check, companies will suffer because it's a two-way street. So the triple P is always very important. May I then hand over to you, Minister and HOD.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the question. Also those with some of the bite in it. The clean audit is always a measurement tool. It's always good to receive a clean audit. The disabled people, I think it's important that every single department needs to look where they can invest and make a difference. The little bits that we all can add can help those disabled people to have quality and a better life. I think that's the whole idea with the umbrella handbook translation. I also want to state that I'm going to touch on one or two questions simultaneously. I think the importance is that sometimes we want to do so much research and get it so perfectly that we never get to the product at the end of the day. But I think we've done it. We've put it in each library within the province. We've showcased it on various platforms so people can be aware of it. And National has stepped into it and they are busy nationally to distribute it. That speaks to success and it speaks to that there's opportunity for every single blind person who wants to understand the workings of a law committee can and is being able now to do that. And I really think in future we will need to look at creating more opportunities of this kind. I don't know if there's any
research being done, and if the people in the library is going to use that, but maybe they should do somebody in the department to have that information. Then on the droughts, the financial assistance, Jefferson, I don't want to make this a political debate days and hours, and because I'm a firm believer, if you look at droughts, and if you look at actually the big issue that should unite all of us, and that is how to overcome poverty, at the end of the day, we all realize, maybe Nana, that the Department of Water Affairs is in serious financial trouble. That doesn't mean we can sit back and not do something. I'm a firm believer that if we want to overcome poverty, the three spheres of government needs to focus their attention and pull together, and then we will overcome poverty. But that's the only way. That's why it's so important going forward that we get national, provincial and local government IDPs aligned, so that we spend our money collectively on the issues alleviating poverty. So yes, there's a bulk problem. The bulk problem is coming on because in the province we do have a water plan. We started this water plan in 2012. I think looking back, and they say hindsight is clear sight, looking back, one of the mistakes we made in that 2012 version of our water plan was that our baseline was the rainfall of, I think, the year before 2011. And all of a sudden, what has happened here now, 5 years later, was that we had just very, very low rainfalls. And nobody could predict that. And if you speak to anybody in the sector, the universities, and they will tell you that in future we will need to learn to manage drought. We will never be in a position to build ourselves out of a drought or some of these crises. So it's going to be more, how are we going to manage that? Obviously we need to invest. Obviously we need to, and that's why the 10 million dam is now being approved, and that dam will not only be for household use, but it will release 5,000 hectares irrigable land to new farmers. If you add on to that, we're also busy with, I think it's already signed, I will get my facts on that, the Brandvlek dam, we're pushing very hard to get that, the permission to increase the capacity of that dam. And with relatively little money, we will be able to get 4,400 irrigable land to new farmers there as well. And it will speak to food security, and it will also speak to water security going forward. The roles of our municipalities and councils, yes, it's an ongoing battle, I think, because every 5 years you get new councillors, but that's how democracy works. We will keep on training. From our side, I think the whole communication sector and how we communicate and get our communities to participate within the municipal domain is more, it's for us very important, because we need to change our thinking around this. I think from where we're sitting, we think that people must come to public meetings. The new technology, people work from morning to night, they come at home, they're not going to go to a political meeting of their municipality. So we need to start to interact with them in their homes. And how are we going to do that? I think that's where the development of this app, the interactive app through communities, is going to play a huge role. We need to push that, and we need to get our councillors and our municipal managers to understand the back office within the municipal domain is going to be crucial to make this a success. And let's be all honest, we don't always realize the importance of communication till it's sometimes too late. And I think now you can see that if people are informed, they're mostly happy and they will work with you. But then you must inform them. And it's going to be how we're going to change our communication systems so that people know what's going on in the municipal domain. And we're also looking now and doing research on entering into a contract with your community. What can the community expect from their municipality? I think that will also help. But we also need to get our councillors
to call for public meetings, to go out to their communities and to speak to their communities. More and more after a councillor is elected, all of a sudden they are afraid to speak to. Because as soon as you've been elected, you can't just shift the blame. You must become part of finding this solution. And it's not so easy to defend that in a state where we struggle to get ahead of poverty. So that is for us very, very, very important that we do land that, and we've got the team to make a success of this new communication thinking and system that we want to implement. Honourable Member Simmons, the water in your region, it's also part of the debate, a part of the longer plan. We just need to also get our baselines ready because in some instances, and we must be very careful not to generalize, but when we look at the Beaufort West, it's important that we talk to the 40% water loss, because it's no use you build on and build on and nothing is doing to maintain the current systems and support. From where I'm sitting, Beaufort West do have enough water. It's the management of the water. So we need to understand where to put our resources. And from where I'm sitting, I think in a place like Beaufort West, we will need to look at the management of the systems there. Oudtshoorn and Kannaland, it's crucial that we especially get Oudtshoorn's water supplies ready, because that will build the whole economy of the region. And also, I think in Kannaland, instead of asking 400 million rand for building a new dam, you can do much more with much less money, and that's the space we need to operate in. And this will definitely form part of our new water plan. National Minister asked that we need to pull together a water committee. I'm the chairperson of that with Mr. Khan and the department, and we're working at the terms of reference. But again, hindsight, our 2012 water plan was a Western Cape water plan. I want to change it to a water plan where all three spheres of government buys in. So we will sit around the table, plan together, and obviously everybody understands that water is life and we need to get the water systems in that area, right, especially within the climate change domain. But when we talk water, and we focus today very much on water, just remember that waste is our next crisis. Next crisis, and that's why I say we don't get ahead of this curve. We're always in the space of playing catch-up. And that's why our councillors, our municipalities must understand building sustainable, resilient cities will need a complete mind shift. Then to the Honourable Richard Jantje, coming from the Honourable Member whose party can't help the Congress, one good thing is that I can tell you now you won't replace me. Somebody else might. But yeah, if we play in that domain, let's play in that domain. So I'm also very much honest about this, that when you stand for coming to Parliament, I stand to be a member of Parliament. There's no such position as the NEC. That the Premier will decide later stage. I've got a passion of serving the people, and doesn't matter in what capacity, I will always do that, because in our communities, and our big challenge in this country is to overcome poverty. And in our poor communities, it's good people living there. Sometimes we look at them and we criticize them for burning tires. Well, if we fulfill our role of looking after them and seeing that they can have a life in dignity. So at that phase, I think we've as a government sometimes failed, and then we want to blame the community. So it doesn't matter in which capacity I'm coming back, surprise, surprise, but I will keep on serving my community. Then I think if you ask me one of the biggest successes, the two of us know one another years, and I can be quite honest on this. I think if I'm not coming back and you ask me that question then, I will tell you that I left behind a great team. This is a great team. So the failures. The failures. Depends from which angle. Let's not talk to failures, let's talk to things that I would have liked to done better in. I would have loved to have a more open debate on a political dispensation that will really serve our people. I've got this burning desire to debate the executive mayoral system. And I don't have any other systems that I want to push. I just think 20, 25 years after democracy, we need to look back and say, listen, if there's still so many fires out there, then the system is failing. So I would really love that debate. And even you as a standing committee who's got oversight, let's have that debate. I think it's very exciting. And I've gone so far to start the work with Professor Jaap Visser of the University of Stellenbosch to get a first and a second draft on the table. And a couple of things that we've talked through. It's a very interesting debate that you can have within that domain. I think, and you're going to tell me it's on a national level, and yeah, we had a very bad run on local government national ministers to the extent that we had six national ministers in 7 years, which speaks to continuity. And I would have loved to have been able to tell you that there's a new financial model for local government on the table, but I can't do that today. Doesn't matter whose fault it is, I think we owe it to our municipalities. I think we haven't come up with a model, and this discussion and this cloud hanging over districts and even the role of provinces, and do we really add value? And so the whole new financial model, powers and functions, I think we could have done more on that debate. The water situation in Cape Town, the big city, I think looking back and from your perspective they haven't done well. From my perspective I think they've done incredibly well to help us, first of all, not to run out of water, but second of all, not to panic. And not to panic and then invest in white elephants, because there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure and coming from big firms that wants to invest in all sorts of water mechanisms to augment our water. But at the end of the day, there will be a price. And we need to stick to our water plan and invest in our water plan. And I think going forward, if you talk water, you obviously talk food security, you talk Bill of Rights, you talk all of these incredible economic growth and which we need to get right. But there needs to be a fine balance, because if water is too expensive, we won't have food to eat. And it's a fine balance that we need. And obviously it speaks to the dignity of people in their houses and to get that right. And I think that the city's water modeling will pull in the right direction going forward. The question how we've divided the Braille, and I think I've answered that to all the libraries and so forth. The money, the 974 million rand, was for storms, droughts and fires throughout the last year. Remember, as we sit here, Colin and the department, I think they're busy dealing with seven disasters and the aftermath of seven disasters. So while the fires, Naisna fires were a year ago, they're still busy cleaning up, getting Naisna back on track and so forth. So it's a long process. And for the standing committee's sake, I think we can present the whole list and all the projects that they seek money for to the standing committee. We can hand that in. We do have the whole 974 million rand where it's going to be spent on. The cost of the smoke alarms is more or less round about plus minus 160 rand for a smoke alarm. You do get cheaper models. This is the model that was researched for 3 years. It's got a lithium battery in. The battery's life will be around about 10 years. And so forth, so rather spend 160 rand, I think for 10 years it's a bargain. And then you buy a model of 80 rand, but you replace the batteries every month and that doesn't work. So that's the one that we want to promote. On the formal side, I really think that government's whole purpose, and sometimes when I look at myself, sometimes I get myself spending so much time on emails, spending time on emails and cell phones, answering the haves in the world, and not spending time on the have-nots. And the government's role is to get people out of poverty. So I think it's important that we help and see to it that we land the smoke alarms in the informal and poor part of our markets, the RDP housing market and so forth. I think the formal market we must just tackle through building plans, and it must be compulsory within the approval of building plans. If you're in that space, 160 rand is nothing. It must just be a must. So I think, Chair, I've also answered your question on the braille and the smoke alarms. Just to add that, yes, 8,000 we need to, but we've interacted with municipalities, we showcased it. We, even when we had the councillors training, there was a stall where we promoted it with the councillors and the mayors. So yes, definitely we need to get the municipalities to buy into this whole system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to attempt to answer a couple of questions, and I think for me the important one is that obviously we are concerned about the underspend of 15.6 million.
So you are concerned?
You are concerned, and the entire management team. But let me break it down what was in the underspending of 15.9 million. There was earmark fund for fires, and given the fact that in the last season there were not so many fires besides fires at Nyesner, there was a saving in terms of fires of about 6.8 million. Previous years, in the prior year, you could remember that it was in the region of 17 to 22,000 fires, and that money was spent. A large amount of the money was spent on Nyesner fires. But for the normal aerial firefighting, there was a saving of 6.8 million, given the fact that in the fire season, in particular with the year under review, there were not so many fires. That money has been surrendered to the provincial treasury. There have been, over the last couple of weeks before the adjustment budget process now, late in October, negotiated with the provincial treasury to get that money back. In principle, they've agreed to give us the money back so that we can have a combined budget for this year of the aerial fighting in the region of 10 million. So we are getting that money back for aerial firefighting. In addition to that, there was a project that has been committed, it's ongoing. It's in relation to a framework for interventions in municipalities. There's an academic institution that does that work for us at the moment. That was in the region of about 500,000, and that money we also negotiated will get back from treasury. And then there was money in terms of draft, and that was a 3.4 million, and we're currently in discussions with the provincial treasury to get that money also back in the adjustment budget process, and that relates to the SCOA stuff. And then there has been a underspending in the region of about just over 3 million in terms of COE. And later on we come to the HROC, which posts were vacant and advertised, and will provide the reasons for the underspending in the 3.5 million in terms of COE. I think the composition of the staff have fundamentally changed. People are more mobile. We have advertised some of the posts a number of times. Just recent in the week, a post that has been advertised while we're going through the entire process, we get to the end, we offer the person the post, the person says, but I'm earning more than that. Can I actually match my salary? It's a highly regulated environment, HR, and these are just reasons. It's a public service Act. It's a public service regulation, and the Western Cape government's got its own policy on recruitment and selection. A highly regulated, you must cross your T's and dot your I's and so on. And you can't circumvent a process or a step. You need to go back. If not successful, you need to go back and advertise if there's not a suitable candidate for that. So the HR environment is a really regulated environment, and as a department and as a management team, we try to navigate our way to get the appropriate and the right people in the positions and so on. Can I answer the balance of the questions?
I think in terms of the non-compliance of senior managers, obviously in terms of the regulations, municipalities are required to get the concurrence or the support of the ministry in terms of the appointments, whether that is senior managers or municipal managers. And at times, given the assessment that we do internally with our own capacity, we come to the conclusion that it's either substantial or procedural non-compliant. Then we consult the minister's advice and then we write back to the municipalities and so on. And it has happened that both substantive compliance and procedural compliance, the minister has asked those municipalities to set aside those appointments, given the fact that it's both substantive and procedural non-compliance. So in cases we have done so, we have the detail, and Kumo has the detail, and Ida. But we've done so in the case of Cedarburg Municipality with infrastructure, direct infrastructure and direct corporate. We've done so in the case of the municipal manager in Lanesville. And within that case, we've actually gone to court, and the court ruled in our favor to set that appointment aside. We've done so in the case of a director infrastructure in Boba Best. And so there have been a number of other cases where we've asked, also in the case of Kalala, both with his CFO as well as the municipal manager, given the procedural non-compliance, the minister asked to set those appointments aside. So it's an extensive due diligence exercise. We also inform and work with our national colleagues. We work with the national minister, and we keep our national colleagues and the national minister informed about our views in relation to any of the appointments with regard to the 1656 and the 757 appointments. But we have the details shared if you want us to make it available. On the 395 councillors and so on, and I think Zaneri's got a detail, that's a period under review. Obviously there are more councillors than that. But the fact of the matter is the City of Cape Town, with our own material that we've developed in the province, have undertaken to do their own in-house training in the City of Cape Town. So the City of Cape Town councillors are not necessarily included in this case. Can I just say about Minister has answered about the water. I think in terms of the drafts, it required us extremely to work very closely with the National Department of Water and Sanitation, particularly on the official level. The National Department does not have the reservoirs funding. Now in the 6.8 billion plan that the then Minister Kigawa has in his budget speech table right at the beginning of the year, this province has actually made two applications. And based on those two applications that we've made, an amount of almost 1 billion has been allocated to those towns, both to some of the municipality and the provincial departments for water relief and so on, City of Cape Town for the aquifers and so on. That's just apart from that. And I'm going to ask both Colin and Jackie and Ida and Maris to give you the full detail. Besides that, the National Disaster Management Center has also made funding available during the year and subsequent to those years. And in our own budget, we have prioritized funding for municipalities for drought relief and infrastructure-related matters. And we've also got received funding from the provincial treasury, the provincial government cabinet, for drought relief in certain municipalities and so on. We have the detail. We have the projects per municipality and amounts that are in the respective municipalities. Just on the dams and the capacity and so on, we had extensive discussions around the Department of Water and Sanitation with senior officials in that department about building additional dams in the province and so on. There's not necessarily the appetite to build additional dams, but it is some consideration to expand the capacity of existing dams and so on. And it's for their own reasons that they do not wish to expand the dams. Minister has spoken about particularly Otswan, Kanaland and both of this innovation in the water. The entire department are monitoring that situation very closely. And we are putting contingency measures in place to help those municipalities with water matters. That is a summer for rainfall area, but obviously in terms of the weather services indicating that it's below
average rainfall for those reasons during the summer. In addition, the Otsoro municipality also got 30 million from the national government for the Blossoms project, for the pipeline to relay water from the projects to the reservoir. Chairperson, can I just ask one or two of the chief directors just to provide a further detail?
Thank you, Richard. Chairperson, I'm going to ask Jackie to just give you a quick rundown of the 973 million.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm that through the National Disaster Management Center, we've received 4 allocations since August 2017. The first allocation, we've received 74.8 million, which went to the Department of Agriculture, the City of Cape Town, Bito and Theewaterskloof Municipality. Then in March 2018, in the second allocation, funding was allocated to Cedarbrook, Matsikama, Drakenstein and City of Cape Town to an amount of 164.9 million. And then the third allocation was towards agriculture in June 2018, an amount of 38 million, mostly for fodder release. The municipalities that received funding through the first and second allocation was mostly for groundwater augmentation projects. So for the first, second and third allocation, we've basically then received an amount of 277.7 million. Then the most recent allocation was for the Neisner fires as well as storms and drought, which was confirmed to us on the 4th of October. We have received funding for the storms and Neisner fire, an amount of 86.3 million. For the Department of Education, 25.8 million. Agriculture, 1.3. Human settlements, 127,000. National Department of Environmental Affairs, 54.5. Bito Municipality, 4.5 million. Which is then the total of 86.3. For the drought, we've received an amount of 887.5 million. Through the National Department of Water and Sanitation, 28.9 million for the Theewaterskloof Emergency Response Project, 15 million for Otsoro Municipality in relation to the Blossom Project, then to the National Department of Environmental Affairs, 63.6 million, Agriculture, 41.9 through the Land Care Program for fencing, alien clearing and irrigation, and 170 million through COF for livestock for farmers, and the City of Cape Town, 553 million for water augmentation, Cape Flats and Atlantis, as well as Table Mountain Aquifer. So Chair, in total, from August 2017 up to date, we've received an amount of 1.2 billion, of which 1.165 was specifically so for drought.
So am I hearing you correct, 1.2 billion? So the 974 is the latest that was submitted. That's right.
Can I just ask Ira just to respond, but also to add the money that the provincial government and the provincial department have actually also prioritized for the drought. So the 1.2 billion is the additional money. Maris.
Based on the assessment that was done by our team of professional engineers as well as the team of drought engineers that we've deployed in the district, we've categorized municipalities into high, medium and low risk, and based on the findings of the geologists as well as the technical advisory services of our engineers, we've identified projects and we transferred the total amount of 105 million to these municipalities.
We've got more questions?
Yes, thank you
so much. Alright, thanks. Over to Honorable Janji, and then we can just take that follow up.
Just a follow up, Chair. Maybe quickly, Ms. Pandaram, to because I'm interested in the times. The 800 million, when did you receive that?
A recent doesn't help me, but when is that?
Thank you, Chair. I did indicate that it was announced on the 4th of October. There is a meeting...
Isn't that the 86 million on the 4th of October?
Okay, all right. Let me help you.
Can I just assist the Chairperson? The money has been confirmed. There was a rigorous process where we had to bid for money, given our own assessment and stuff like that. We drew up and we made the representations and presentations. They have confirmed on the 4th of October what the allocation is in the Western Cape. And based on that, the money will now flow in the adjustment budget process, in the national adjustment budget process. But some of the other funding has already been provided prior to this. This is just a big amount of all the 900 million that is flowing.
Yeah, no, thank you. My next point, therefore, Chair, I think is still on this. So you, since August 2017, up to today, you have received 1.2 billion. That's what we're getting. In different, you have 1.2 billion allocated to you as a province and committed to you. Okay, you might not have received it. That's the regulation. That's what has happened. So we agree on that. It's 1.2 billion, and it relates to issues of drought and the related disasters. Is that correct? So basically, Chair, there's more money coming into the province to help with the situation, but we can't even spend 3.4 million on drought. You just indicated to us that you couldn't spend 3.4 million on drought, unlike the fire, which was earmarked, and there was no fire. There is drought, but we couldn't spend 3.4 million. We now are getting 1.2 billion. Bulk of it goes into the drought. So now the question is, do you have the capacity as the department to respond to these kind of emergencies? So because the issue now becomes, the problem is not the money. Because if the problem was the money, you would have spent 3.4 million. So the problem is not the money. Tell us where the problem is, because I think the problem is with you and whoever you work with in terms of municipalities. Because you're sitting with money, you actually take it back in a context of drought, because you're hoping for all of us. That's what you said about the 3.4 million. And we're still coming to the others, even the fire one. We'd like to unpack that when we go there, because you're saying that was a baseline. Fires are always there in the Western Cape, so we're going to get you into those kind of details. That's my first point, Chair. I'm really interested to get a response on that. Because this standing committee would have loved to say we want to support you, to be supported and given more money, but if you can't spend a little of the money that you receive, why are we giving you so much? But then the next point, Chair, to maybe I'll leave that to the minister. We can come back to that later on. But thanks for your response on those three things. I think I want to appreciate that. Let me pause there, Chair.
All right, thanks, Honourable Judge. Honourable Simmons.
Chair, just in front of the HOD again, if I asked my specific question regarding exceptional cases. Now, I'm going to make an example. I'm not going to mention the municipality's name. This happened in April. In August, the department had to retract a letter the minister wrote to the specific municipality regarding a specific director which was appointed, based on your letter stated that did not adhere to the regulations for senior managers. Yet, on the 8th of August, this department had to retract that letter to a specific municipality. That's why I asked you that specific question. I hope that puts my question into better context for you now. Thank you. So, can you please answer my question?
I think on that front, it assists you because we've got, this is the annual report. So some of the specifics later have been addressed through this exercise. But I'm just going to phrase this, you don't have to respond now. Minister, you mentioned that some of the municipalities have been taken away from the basics. If you could assist somewhere during our interaction, just for your notes there, how many municipalities that are currently in that program now, seeing the effect, seeing the statement that you made that funds have been taken away from that. And also the question of corruption, you spoke about that. It's an animal that is not welcome. I don't like that animal. It's very ugly. But the question is, the municipalities that are currently being pursued by the Hawks for actions that are peculiar to the MFMA, and obviously some of them we've seen through the courts, there were rulings. For instance, in the Osorin, there was a ruling, there was a sentencing of the mayor there. But what are the specifics in terms of the municipalities? Which municipalities and that are still being pursued by the Hawks? And how far is the Hawks in terms of dealing with that? Are you satisfied with the pace in that regard? And after this, I'm going to go straight to the annual report.
Just something that I forgot on the follow-up to the minister.
Yes.
In terms of his response, he says you have 8,000 smoke alarms that you have at 160, which says you have spent about roughly 1.2 million on the smoke alarms. The only area I need you to help us with, how many areas, and do you have a list of these areas where there are these smoke alarms, so that we're able to go. I agree with him that it's not the amount of money, because saving lives is priceless, but we do need to get an indication so that we understand whether there's value for this.
Over to you, to the minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Just on the, just for the earmarked saving, just in the perspective, it is was a CAE for drought. Was a CAE for drought. The first part of it was for comms, for communication staff to help with the campaign, the awareness raising and stuff like that and so on. That staff has been appointed in the interim. We had also appointed in terms of the risk at the Disaster Management Center, three staff members, they have been appointed. And we've also dealt with the engineers and the infrastructure which have been appointed. So that's why I say we're currently in negotiations with the Special Treasury to give us that money back. It hasn't been under, they have been spent in the year under review, but subsequently the staff has been appointed. So that's why we're asking the Provincial Treasury to give us that money back. So we had the ability to spend that money. We want to finalize that before the adjustment budget process with the Provincial Treasury. I'm going to just ask, I don't know if Minister wants to talk about the dogs, can we go with the dogs? Okay. I'm going to ask then Colin in the area to speak about it, but let me just say about there was a number of investigations in municipalities in relation to allegations of fraud in maladministration and so on. Some have been referred to the Hawks, and the Hawks have actually completed their investigations. They have handed that over to the NPA. So in the case of Canala, it has been handed over to the NPA. There's about seven methods. In relation to George, they've handed over to the NPA. And also they've handed over to the NPA. So I had a personal discussion with some of the warrant officers that investigated that confirmed that the methods have been handed over to the NPA. Last week I met with the chairperson of the Hawks in the province, Rafi Lepka. We have written a letter under the signature of Minister to ask progress on those matters and so on. The Hawks have indicated, not the Hawks but the NPA have indicated there's capacity challenges with it, but they will attend to the matters as soon as possible. The challenge with this chairperson and committee members is that The Hawks investigate, but you can't take that report to council and say, yes, no allegations of fraud and corruption and so on. Either just deal with the council or deal with the official.
You must now wait until it goes to the NPA and the NPA to consider, and they can consider whether they actually want to prosecute and so on. And then only they say they raise the charges and the matter goes to court and so on. So at that stage, you can most probably say there's allegations against it. I'm not going to deal with it in terms of the disciplinary process. So it actually, while the person is still working in the municipality, you now wait until such time that there's a conviction and so on. And as I said, there will be, the NPA has indicated capacity challenges. I've subsequently have also been now with the SIU to discuss the assistance with the SIU. The SIU has indicated when they investigate the matter, they can actually give us a report before it's handed over either to the police or the Hawks for further investigation for prosecution. But that report can then be used and applied to deal, to go in a disciplinary process with those working in the municipality and so on. The Hawks are currently, and we've got the detail, we can make the detail available, the Hawks are still currently investigating in certain municipalities like Beaufort West and so on. It's difficult because we want actually to get us to some kind of analytical conclusion to deal with those that have alleged to be committed some fraud, corruption and maladministration and so on. We have the detail and we can make it available to the committee. Can I ask Colin to speak on the alarms and then Ida just to speak on our back to basis as well as just the case in the works of the institutional information inquiry.
Okay, so the chair, we started the smoke alarm with a pilot project in Wallasey. And since then we have been working and installing smoke alarms in the following areas, Breda Valley, Witzenburg, Stellenbosch, Drakenstein, Etzekwan, Eisner, George, Overstrand and the rest of the Overberg, Mossel Bay. And yesterday I also delivered a lot personally to Swellendam. So there's a lot of areas that we are delivering. We can give you the more exact areas we can send through to you, but those are the areas we're working with. And the way we decide on this is we look at risk. So your higher risk areas, obviously you want to try and get your risk. And that's the kind of process we're going. We also get requests from municipalities to assist, which might not be dire risk, but then we go and we look at the feasibility of the project. And it's important what the minister said, just to mention, is that, you know, it's not a one size fits all. We can't use the kind of smoke detector that we use in informal settlements in an industrial sort of scenario, because you sometimes have hot processes happening there which would settle false alarms. So that's the way that we have to go about it. Thank you.
Mr. Dane, just out of interest, the ones that you're talking about, the latest that you've embarked on, I presume that it's not part of the 8,000. Is it?
No, it's not part, it's additional. This is it's a new year, so the project continues to.
Okay.
So it's every year we try and we hopefully we're going to get to a point where we have one in every
area. All right. I haven't checked HOD on the ATP if the target was increased for the smoke alarm.
We have in this financial year allocated additional funding for smoke alarms.
Okay.
And that will flow in the adjustment budget process.
All right.
Can I ask just Ida?
The matters with the Hawks. I think we are awaiting the next step. Just in terms of the Back to Basics program, Back to Basics program initially identified a number of three municipalities that we supported, but also acknowledging that in each of these municipalities their needs were different. So we did a diagnostic in each of them to understand what their specific needs and requirements were, and every one of them have a dedicated support plan that speaks to their specific needs and requirements. And based on where the municipality are at, some we meet on a monthly basis, other ones we meet on a quarterly basis. But what is important is that the model that we use, we bring all sector departments on board to also provide support to them. Now we've been with this journey with these municipalities for a number of years, and in fact my minister indicated two municipalities have now moved off the program. And what that means is that they have achieved a level of stability, of sustainability, and also both of them clean audits, and two have now moved off, and we're extremely proud because that shows us the model of bringing all the sectors together, of the municipality taking co-ownership for themselves moving forward, the municipal manager taking charge, being in charge of the whole process, we supporting him, is definitely that something that is working. As a municipality, we anticipate we'll move off the program early in January, and we're currently working very close to that municipality. That does not mean, honourable members, that the ones that are currently on, we are leaving, and the likes of Kalaland and Beaufort West and some of those municipalities will keep on providing support on an ongoing basis to make sure that together we are able to move them forward as well.
Alright, Ms. Parliament, if you could assist for the benefit of the members of the committee and all the members who are observing this from the public, what is the figure on the specific municipalities that are in the program still? And then which of those that have graduated? You see, you want to clap hands for the ones who are doing good and name and shame those who are not doing good. Then we can work hard from this side to assist. Will you do that favor for us?
Chairperson, when we started the journey together and back to basics, we identified 10 municipalities. Two municipalities have now graduated or moved off the program. The first one is Kepa Galas municipality. They're the first one that moved off earlier in the year. The one that recently moved off as close as a month ago is Swelling Dam municipality. And the one, honourable members, that in January, February will move off is Oudtshoorn.
Also, yeah, we see those are great news. So we'll clap for them in January. Yeah. So the rest are still in the program. All right, thank you. Now, the additional. Look at you, Minister, can't stop laughing there. I will wait until you finish laughing, then you can answer the rest of the questions. Honourable Jan, you sorted. Alright. That's fine. At 10 o'clock I'm going to take break. Whether we in the middle of a question I'll stop and then go for break. I need to give 2 hours break for my friend next to me. But also, we should be done now. I think members are sorted. Any questions?
On this,
no, any questions on this book? Alright. Okay. May I request that honourable members, you ask questions anywhere from page 9. To page 50. Page 51, yeah. Look at your book. A and B. Page 1, page 9 up to page 50. You can ask anything. It's your call, because I presume that you're now able to relate to this book in your sleep, because you've been having it for some time. Honourable Inanna, Honourable Janji, Honourable Olifield, in that order.
This question, amongst other things, do think about the institute is used in integration as part of the special families process. Can you get from the department what is it that we have done in state and implemented as far as institute is concerned? Because Western Cape in particular is one of the provinces where the issue of separate amenities in the challenge and the residential exclusivity is the issue. Now, with the mandate of this department in using this perspective, it has a responsibility of integrating the community. Now, the question is, what you have done in order to implement this initiative is successful. Because now we are confronted with the issue of the shortage of land and land migration. And this land migration
also mainly, I know the issue of expropriation of land without compensation, but the people, the communities out there have got the challenge of the issue of land, that they are taking the land on their own illegal issue. And on the other hand, the department has got this provision of this, what is one of the responsibilities of initiating and implementing the inclusivity in the department. What it has done, where it has done, and how successful that is. The question about the Tusong centers on page 21. When we visited the Tusong centers around the province, when we were doing the local government standing committee, our oversight, what we have been confronted on these centers were the working hours that the people were having, especially on the weekends. And during the week, that as much as we provide the services to the school-going kids, but the amount of time is what they told us that is not enough, because when they come there, the centers are closing early, and on weekends there is no access. And something that we highlighted with the department, that working hours in the Tusong centers must be flexible so that they can accommodate the kids. And on weekends, where everybody, especially when they want to do their homework, the Tusong centers are closed. And we highlighted to the department that they must look. I just want to get the clarity how far the department has done in order to alleviate that challenge the students were having. Chairperson, yes, the issue on page 22 about the drought, we are going to talk about the drought up until we say that everything now is fine. And then municipalities that have been given advice that they must sort other means of accessing water. And one of such is the issue of desalination. And then municipalities in the province that are undergoing the process of having desalination plants. And if they are, which are they? Because the particular reference is the desalination plant that seems to be abandoned, that is it, Emmanuelis, next to Kailisha. And the pipes have been laid there for a very, very long time. Nothing seems to be happening. Now the question is, are there other plans? Because we can't rely only on rain. We have to design other mechanisms to see what is it that can be done in order we have water, because we are going to have the drought next year. But what are the plans that we are having so that we mitigate the challenge? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Gant.
Thank you, Chair. Just to be quick, because I've got quite a number. That's on the organizational structure. Maybe just your comments, HOV. I'm kind of curious how this works. Nothing has changed in the structure of doing like that except this. But you have got this structure that you have here, headed by the three chief directors. I'm curious how that works in practice in relation to the three programs. Administration, what is that other one, development planning, and the other one is local government or your three programs. Because last time when we were here, and I'll come back to that later on, because we seem to be at the same point. We spoke about the organizational restructuring thing, and there doesn't seem to be progress on that at all. But I'll come back to that. On page 22, just two things on page 22. The paragraph on the right on top, which speaks about your geologists were appointed to assist authorities with geological services and to see the installation of boreholes.
That's a blend, okay.
Of boreholes, and my interest is there on the boreholes. We spoke with the minister here in Parliament, and the question there is, you seem to have been part of the installation of boreholes. The question now I'm interested in, how many boreholes have you installed, which is now your legal boreholes, during this period under review? And how much was that? The second one, which we dealt with the minister in the House, are you now in a position to tell us as the standing committee? Because you couldn't, the minister couldn't at that point tell us how many illegal boreholes do we have? There's legal boreholes that you are part of, you should know about. There's illegal boreholes, which have increased because of the drought situation. And it becomes your role, together with the municipalities, to follow those illegal boreholes. Most of these are your private boreholes that in each and every municipality. Are you now in a position, do you know of Yedila Noki up until this point? You don't know what's illegal and so on. So that's, and then still on page 22, the water security risk, not sure whether in the report referring to the gift of the givers, hydrologists who found water in the worst. And well, it's just difficult to see what extra meaningful water supply the local government added to the system. So help there. And I leave page 22. Let's go to page 28. And this is the point I was trying to make earlier on. You are saying the department is currently in the process of reviewing its organizational structure to ensure that it is aligned to the legislative mandate, and it is anticipated that this process will be completed during the 2018-2019 financial year. The point I want to make there is, in the last annual report, that was our conclusion. You informed this committee that there was a process of organizational restructuring. Now you can't come back again today in the next annual report and say there is a process, because that was the conclusion. I'm interested, what is the progress if there was such organizational restructuring a year ago? Or you will tell us that no, we were wishful then, we had not started. We won't blame you, but please tell us that when we informed you, we had not started. We only thought about it after the annual report. So I vividly remember that, but because I had to go back to my last annual report and I saw my note about that, hence I'm able to raise this. Then the next point is, I just need maybe, let's help each other here on this issue. It's about the vacancy rate, the exercises there. I don't want to, help me to understand why we must take half a year for the vacancy process. Half a year, 6 months basically. Because it is in this report, you talk about 6 months as a benchmark to complete that process. And I want you to make me understand, because quite clearly, once there's a vacancy, your advert takes 21 days. That's your maximum. 21 days, that's your advert. Okay? Then your process of interview and all of that thereafter, possibly let's give you another month to do that, which is still a lot. Okay? But thirdly, the process of the appointment and going to cabinet, and then there's a month's notice. You add all of those together, it doesn't take you to 6 months. So I want you to help us understand, why is this the 6 month thing? If there was a prescription of 6 months, so that if you are saying to us that's a policy that needs to be changed, we need to get into that. Because I can't understand why it must take so long to just fill a vacancy. That is because 6 months, it means there's money that is not going to be spent for 6 months. And later on, we will get to know that. My next page, Chair, is on page 31. Page 31, Provincial Performance Indicators. I'm interested in the Program Impact Evaluation Report. Can we have a copy of what the outcome of that report? On page 31, under B, the Provincial Performance Indicators, and that is in 1.4. Do we have a report, a copy of that report? And then the last point on that page, on page 31, under the heading Strategy to Overcome Areas of Underperformance, Changes to Plan Targets, you are saying there were no changes to planned targets. I repeat, there were no changes to planned targets. That's what you say. All targets that were met, and there were no significant over in achievement of this. And I'm asking, really? Were there really no changes to set targets? Because we just spoken about the drought here, which was not part of what you planned. So you said the drought did not have any impact on the planned targets. And yet when you go into the report, we do find that the drought had a significant impact on your planned targets. But on page 31, you say they were no. Please help me there, so that I'm with you to understand. The next page is page 36. That's a quick one on page 36. I think I've raised this point earlier on around the practice note on the code of conduct. Maybe just what are the key issues, if you are able to share that even after this, I think it will help. And then the impact assessment chain. You have identified 10 municipalities under the impact assessment. I'm interested firstly why these 10. You might have had to develop a criteria why this particular 10. Are you able to share the outcomes of those assessments, of those impacts? If that would need a chairperson convening the steering committee, I'm happy with that, but I think it's going to be helpful that we get that. Page 38, let me start at the bottom. 1.11, the section 106 in intervention. In those municipalities that are listed, thank you for listing them, but I'm interested that you indicate, can you indicate what was investigated in each of those municipalities, so that we don't just all over the place. And on the fraud and report on legal responses or inquiries in relation to allegations of fraud, maladministration, you have met your targets. Do we have those kind of reports available to be shared or to be provided to the committee? 1.10, report on the assessment of complaints concerning municipalities. The 4 out of 4 achievement. The first question, who are you able to tell us who complained? And therefore, what was investigated in each of those? Let me leave that page. On page 40, strategic objective indicators, the comms. I'm just interested, what was the comms channel? So what communication channel we used in point one, where you achieved 8 out of 8? The next page, page 41. Can you elaborate just on the shared intention? Just curious on that to share with us. And then share the use of this new innovation that you had, your social media training in the West Coast. The use of that in relation to work. And then page 42, a report on the number of committee report back meetings convened by councillors in each ward. Do you have this report available? as a department? And can you share the key findings of those? And probably you will tell us, out of all these ward councillors, how many have convened these meetings? Have they all convened, which will be good? How many have convened? And so on. Page 44. The capacity building program implemented in municipalities is ongoing. Just a point of interest on the back to basics. On the back to basics, now this is where we get to the details of the tape and alert and all of those. So on the back to basics, out of those five pillars, which pillars did you focus on in these municipalities? And you speak about mentoring. Who has been mentored in these municipalities? Let me leave that towards the end, Chair. The assessment of alignment between performance agreements of Section 7 managers against key performance indicators contained in it. You have achieved your target 60 out of 60, but I'm interested, have you found these to be aligned in all of the 60 cases? Were there any gaps that you have identified out of your report? The minister spoke about the executive mayoral system issue. That's 1.4. There's a research to enhance the provincial perspective of stakeholder government. Research was conducted to examine the governance model for local government of Western Cape, with a specific focus on the review of system of local government, that is executive mayoral system. And I guess that's a point that the minister was raising about his wish for the executive. Maybe just share that with us. On 47, the number of municipalities supported to implement indigenous policies. Which are these municipalities that you're talking about? And can you be specific in terms of what kind of indigenous relief has been given in these municipalities? That was my last point. You said up to 50, Chair. Up to 50?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Olifi, and then Honorable Stima. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just a few additional things that member Jan just asked most of the questions. I've just got a few additions to that one on page 21. And this is just for my own understanding. The top paragraph that we have on page 21, where it talks about concluding the baseline assessment report on the state of government in the municipality. What does that report tell us? Well, I see you are indicating there are steps that we are taking, but what is the picture that that baseline assessment tells us? And also on the same page, paragraph 2 on your right, it talks somewhere in the middle there about the department provided training to ward committees and further supported the municipality with a review of public participation in ward committee policy. Is this now, I do not want to ask how many municipalities did you assist in this instance. Can I just ask a question, what is the state of affairs now with regards to that at all municipalities? Are we comfortable now that we are at the point where this ward committee training has taken place to all ward committees? And maybe also, just as a sketch of that, do we have all our committees now functional and operating? So I've been asking those questions all along. And also just the link between this committee members and what we see now uprising. Because it seems to me that when you look at what's happening currently in our communities, even here this morning at Cape Town areas, in the Cape Flat area, you see people are complaining wanting to chase councillors out of communities, but there's no link between them and ward committees. And the ward committee stands with the public. So something is wrong there. So I'm just asking that, Chair, and then I move to page 27. Okay, let me leave 27 because it's basically almost the same. It talks to ward committees, functional, and I see you mentioning numbers, which were your targets. But I just want to understand, are our work committees now functionally operational, and are they fully trained now to be able to do what they are expected to do? And then on page 28, now this is what member Sanchez asked. Just also on page 37. Just at the bottom, 1.8, just an explanation there. I might read this thing wrong. You said you had a plan target of 5 and you achieved 2, and you said you did not achieve 3, and you give the deviation there, what the reasons are. I know it might be demand driven, some of these targets, but obviously one needs to do a bit of assessment to this one, just a bit of clarity on that. Nothing major. Chair, on page 42. Chair, this is what I want for us for point 5 on page 42. You indicate there what the performance indicator is, that your target was 20 and you achieved 12 and 8 could not be achieved. But what I'm interested in is the comments that you are making there. And for me, that kind of indicator should basically have gave you an understanding which of the municipalities need assistance. You should have knew that which municipal systems are functional already. Eventually, when you assess and you visit your municipalities, you should know. I do not expect, for example, that you have 8, you have 12, but already some of these municipalities have already functional systems, which means you did not know. So if I just want you to make me understand what you tried to say to me here. But it seems that this is not in line with my thinking, but maybe I'm wrong. But you can assist me there. Then Chair, just on page 46, the issue 1.1, that performance indicator, quarterly municipal performance report. You said 4 and then 12, then, but what I'm interested in is, under your comments you say, you talk about the fatigue that municipalities experience in terms of reporting. What influenced that fatigue? What is the reason for that? Why are people just, I don't have interest to do a report, or I don't have an interest or anything, that's on the first slide to do that. What is that? I just want to understand, that's the deep issue that you are referring to. Because I think if you're in the public sector and you must report, I'm not sure whether I context that issue correct, but you're saying that as an element of for me laziness in the reporting lines, I'm not sure. But it is public service, so I can report whenever I want. I think that's the mentality. Chair, then on page, okay, now that's other question on page 43, I think that's the chair.
Thank you, Honourable Olivier, Honourable Skimmer.
The chair, please, I won't be that long-winded. Page 53 is what I'm focusing on, sub-program 2.2, public participation. Looking at the purpose and the progress, I know last year, this time, the department spoke about the usage and assisting municipalities with developing apps which people could, if there were service delivery concerns or to lodge complaints, how effective has that been in municipalities where they have assisted the municipalities?
What are you doing there, sir?
Roadblock. Chair, and then secondly, to tie that into, given that most or all of your functional on paper that is work committees have received training, have we seen an improvement in the role which they play, because they are the link between the councillor and the communities on whose behalf they represent in their wards? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. At this point, we're going to break for tea. When we come back, we'll respond to the questions. Perhaps some of them will have been dealt offline, so don't worry. We'll be back here. We'll be back at 10:15.
Ja, das ist gut. bit of shit to do.
Yeah, I know. I'm never using my way yet.
Oh, you okay? The question of the folks.
Yeah, I'm going to focus on the three that has been advertised and how many times it has been re-advertised and stuff like that.
That's that question on page 29. The question, this one.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. Two options of the macro structure.
We have been entered the Ranjan WhatsApp. We've actually reviewed that tools and either amend or tweak some of those two options. We've done so internally and we've given the macro structure as visitors back to OD, and tomorrow they will come and present what they have given us our input the macro organizational structure or design should be. So in terms of the time frames, Honorable Chairperson, the macro structure and the design process review, including change management and a culture journey implementation, and that's phase one. And the due date is set to be March 2019, that's according to the project plan that we've agreed with today. Just a second question on the posts. And I would like just to perhaps focus on the to see how long the filling of the posts are taking. In terms of the guide, this policy, it allows that the post must be advertised within 6 months of it becomes vacant. But we obviously haven't responded in that fashion. We've actually advertised a post, and I'm just looking ahead with me in relation to those three posts. It has been advertised. I'm just giving a detail on it. Seems like in front of the line. Okay, there's with three posts, three director posts, and I'll just give you a breakdown of it. The director of municipal support and capacity building became vacant the 1st of March 2017. The post was advertised on the 18th of April 2017. So within a month it has been advertised. Through that process, no suitable candidate was found. We then embarked on a headhunting process. However, the MEC approved the headhunting and closed it up, and the post was then re-advertised again on the 7th of November 2017. And then again it was re-advertised on the 30th of November 2017 with a closing date of 22nd December 2017. Shortlisted was the 1st of March 2018, and the interviews conducted on the 9th of March 2018, and Cabinet noted and approved that appointment on the 28th of April 2018, and the nomination for approval was done by the MEC, the Minister, on the 21st of May. In that post currently is Dr. Sandra Phelan. She's in that post, and that post is now full. Dr. Sandra Phelan, just indicate your
office. It took them a year before you got Dr. Sandra Phelan.
Yeah.
Not 6 months,
But Honorable Chairperson, as a result of we've gone through the process, we don't get someone suitable, we go through a headhunting, and just the framework sort of allows you to do. And I say again, it's a very regulated framework. You must go through a process, close it, go again, and so on. And these are three. I mean, this is the Public Service Act, this is the regulation, and this is our own Western Cape recruitment and selection policy. These are three things that we must consider. There's a whole list of other things that we need to consider. That's why, and I don't want to make an excuse and so on, it is at times that we'll find this underspending given the process and the requirements around recruitment and selection in government. It is so. We can't deny it, but we're trying our best to actually control the post as soon as possible.
On that point, HOD, before you proceed, is it your sales or is that department? What do you call that people management department? Is it them? Yes. Is it your sales so that you don't take the appellate?
I would rather prefer to refrain from my response.
All right. Because you remember in one other session here, they said these are the process, we are in charge.
Yeah.
Now I see you taking the responsibility alone. But good luck, you may proceed as you are.
So there's also other posts, and we go through the same, there's additional two.
The other one has gone to cabinet, and the cabinet has endorsed the appointment, and then given another process to director, Kosi's post, Kosi Harof had left. And we've gone through an entire process of that also, and re-advertised, and so on, and that process has now been, that post has been advertised. And we finalize the shortlisting over the weekend, so we will conduct the interviews. But Chairperson, I hear what the members say, but you need to first need to put a panel together, you need to get approval for the panel, you need to... And then you must go for competency assessments, you need for the psychologist to come back for the competency assessments, you must talk about it and so on. It's a long and drawn out process.
Really?
It is. Okay.
All right. Let's proceed with the range of questions.
Zuko, can you start? And I'm looking to Colin and then Ira and then Bob and Albert.
Honorable Chair, the question on how has this department taken care of issues relating to inclusivity, in as far as Pluma is concerned. Just to note up front that Pluma, the mandate in terms of implementation of Pluma is the other department, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning under the same ministry, and they are the custodian of Pluma. In as far as this department is concerned, municipalities are required to prepare special development frameworks. And as part of the IDP assessment process, that same department, the team, must now assess the SDF in terms of incorporation in the IDP. While team will speak through the, what are the key issues in terms of the integration of the SDF into the IDP, as well as the process that we've agreed with that team around the review of review and amendments of the SDF as part of the IDP process. And then Monet will speak to the issue around the Tucson Service Center. We have previously indicated to the committee that in the process of doing an audit, in as far as the working hours, Monet will give the latest around which centers have been able to adjust their working hours. Obviously, taking into cognizance the issues that are raised in this house in as far as COE implications for municipalities, that they must also deal with around overtime issues and all those aspects around opening additional hours. But you'll also speak to what are other programs that we're supplementing to ensure that the issue around homework hubs, our linkages with the MOD program, as well as our linkages with the e-center. And then Craig will speak to the issues around work committee functionality. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair and Nandi Nana. I vividly remember you raising this question of opening hours and citizen access very sharply, I think previously. As my Chief Director indicated, we've done two things very sharply. We've done an audit of usage and opening time, I think that's the one. And then we've met with all our Tucson Center managers, I think, to raise awareness around this issue. You will appreciate the issue around HR and overtime and security, but we've asked them at least to start a conversation with the municipalities internally. I'm happy to report that like more than half of them have at least extended their hours to 4:30 now, and there are even some of them that have moved, and I can name them, Temba Lake to Wabomskraal, Mossel Bay, Bito and Solanum to 5 o'clock. Two centres that also started to be open on Saturdays. It's very tough with the government anchor department, but some of the NGOs have extended their services. Even the Roads Accident Fund has in some instances agreed that they will have Saturday services. We will most probably not get it right to the 6, 7 o'clock that they actually envisioned. But in terms of that, we've started one or two innovations. The one specifically with the school going kids. At the e-centers, we find that after school, there's a rush to the e-center. They can only deal with 20 kids. So we've realized it's a difficult one to overcome with a space constraint. So we've now partnered with the Department of the Premier, the Cape Access, and also the Department of Cultural Affairs, what they call the library corners, to see if we cannot, what we call homework hubs or safe educational spaces, and we've actually piloted two already. And we're hoping to build that partnership. And so I think that's the one. The second one is to get more tablets into some of these centers. Sometimes there's only 10 computers, but if you have 10 tablets more, some of the kids can sit outside and access the internet. So that's two. The third one is has to do with our adults and how to process them quicker during the normal hours. So we've partnered with a work group called Service Interface, also from the Department of Training, and we are piloting this financially with three queue management systems at our Tucson centers. So we're trying to look how can we use technology, I think, to increase the access and the usage and optimize on the available time at least. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, members, just to continue with the conversation that our Chief started on the whole SPLUMA implementation, we have partnered with the said Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, and we started identifying which are those municipalities who are supposed to be either reviewing or amending their SDFs because they have had a particular time period of the validity of those. Then we've looked at, as required by SPLUMA, is getting those particular time frames into the time schedules that must be approved by the municipalities, normally by the end of August, so that it's actually written into the time schedule, so it must be done. Then we'll monitor implementation, as was explained by Nozuko, through the assessment process. One of the other matters that we're also asking and trying to assist municipalities is the Environmental Affairs and Development Planning officials actually attend most of our IDP Managers Forum, which we then convene quarterly, to ensure what's required in the IDP from the SDFs actually integrates seamlessly to assist with the planning process within that municipality. Chair, also on a national level, the Department of Cooperative Governance, they've also started a process of reviewing the national guidelines for integrated development planning, and we are quite involved with that particular process. And one of the things that we are trying to put in there is the integrated urban development framework, which is linked to the national development framework and how that affects integrated development planning, not only within the Western Cape, but within South Africa. So that process has also started with that particular department, and we are quite involved with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carrister. Are we all happy this side? Honourable Member? For more. Okay. That's fine. Let's wait for that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to answer the questions on board committees and functionality. There are three questions. The first question pertains to the training of board committee members in the province. Members will recall that prior to the elections in 2016, the department took the initiative to roll out a trainer course for all municipal officials responsible for public participation in order to capacitate them with the necessary skills and knowledge so that they, after the elections of the board committees, could roll out the induction training through their respective board committees. In addition, the department also, taking into account we have 402 wards, we also took the responsibility as a department to ensure that all training material, whether it's handbooks, manuals, guidelines for board committees in all three official languages of the Western Cape, we took responsibility for printing it, and each board committee member in the province were provided with copies thereof. So, in short, all board committees were trained. In terms of functionality, what we discover, past experience has shown us, in year one and year two of the term of board committees, there's usually a lot of excitement and hype in terms of serving on the board committee. So in the first 2 years, functionality is not actually a problem for us. We discover that through our monitoring. But now we're approaching now the third year of the five-year term. Now we're starting to see that functionality is not at the level we would like it to be. But the biggest challenge that we are facing now and what we are focusing on as a department in supporting municipalities is the number of vacancies on board committees. The majority of municipalities have reported to us that they have vacancies. So by ensuring that the functionality of the board committees don't become dysfunctional, we are focusing our support in supporting municipalities in filling those vacancies, but the majority of board committees in this province are still functional. I can report that. The third question in terms of the improvement in the role that board committees play after the training they receive, there is a significant improvement And we have discovered this through our assessment of the IEP, because in the past, public participation, input into the IEP in terms of community projects, board committees are playing a more significant role. And we've discovered that inputs from board committees is finding its place now in the IEPs. Also, what we are doing, as requested previously by the standing committee, is that we must play a more active role in terms of monitoring the functionality by randomly visiting board committees. So we are doing that. And it's very, very encouraging to see that municipalities are providing that feedback to board committees, because one of the concerns board committees used to raise in the past is the lack of prompt responses by municipalities to the citizens' concerns. So that feedback is being provided now to board committees, and they're providing it back to their sectors and the blocks that they are representing. So in total, there is an improvement. I think they understand their roles better now, and like I said, it's finding its place in the IEP.
Orlando.
Chair, it's just in terms of the point that was made around the program impact evaluation report. So at the disaster management, we did one of them, which was the installation of smoke alarms into the informal settlement community. We have the report, so we can make it available to you.
Thank you, Mr. Sam. Okay, another one? I've got another one for you, Mr. Mashele.
I don't know if you've got others on the budget, but I'm not going to get the output.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My questions, I think the first one has been answered, the one that speaks on insects. The second question that the Honorable Member raised was on page 31, where we speak to the last bullet point that says there were no changes on claims targets. When we're drafting the annual report, there's a certain format that we have to follow. If you notice, in terms of the columns, we have a planned target for that particular year, and then there's a next column that says deviation on planned targets. Now you'll notice, if you look back on program one, under that column you have nothing that speaks about deviation. So that particular bullet point speaks to that. That there were no changes, particularly in terms of what we've planned. So what we've planned as that particular program, we've achieved. And if I can just maybe, Chair, because I was part of the program previously, it relates to communication. Number of municipalities supported on the development of ward-level database. That, in relation to that particular program, there was an assessment that was done in the previous financial year. And an assessment sort of indicated what support we needed to give to certain municipalities. But in the process, we also have other forums, sort of communicators forums, where we stress the issue of the availability of the database concerns. Sort of you have a system that you monitor concerns of communities. So when we planned, the 20 was what the department aimed to assist the municipalities. But at the time when we had to assist municipalities, we then discovered that about 8 municipalities have already worked with other municipalities and sort of worked together in terms of having a particular system in place. Hence you see an under achievement in that particular area. So it doesn't say that when we planned, we didn't know what we were planning. There was an assessment that was done in the previous financial year, and that 20 was then a target. I'm responding because I was part of setting the target for that.
Chairperson, just before we respond to the balance of the questions, and I know we're going to talk about some of the investigations, but can I suggest that to answer the questions around the complaints, and perhaps the one or six, but in relation to the investigations and the currently underway and stuff like that, given the sensitivity that we rather submit that information in writing, if you don't mind, Chairperson.
Happy with that. Members, we happy?
Yeah, I'll keep
that. Yeah. Okay. Now with that would be responses.
No,
this is
the last
year and
the
okay. All right.
On the
wall. Now, when I say no movement, then I'm assuming that's
with
that. Thank you. Yes.
Honorable Chair, I'm a member. I'll respond to a few questions, and then after that, the colleagues will provide some feedback about their specific areas of responsibility. Just in terms of the app, honorable member. We plan to roll out the app, our citizen application, over a period of 3 years. So year one and year two, we dedicated to develop the app with our 5 pilot municipalities. We've now come at the end of that process. So we are very happy that the app is stable, it's working, it's been severely tested in all the municipalities by a number of users. And we have just obtained approval now to go out and procure a service provider to help us to roll it out. 12 municipalities, unlimited users, and we are hoping to have those municipalities on board very, very soon. We've already started engaging with the municipalities in this regard, because from the municipality side, you need to bring your IT capability on board as well as your communication capability, and these municipalities really will do the rollout are ready for us, and they're actually very excited because they've seen the capabilities of the app. So we are very excited for the next phase, and we have already started with that. Honourable members, then just in terms of the baseline report and also the reporting fatigue, the reporting fatigue is something that the municipalities brought to our attention as we engage them on an ongoing basis. And what this is they say to us, departments, we give you information, but tomorrow another department asks exactly the same information from us. And the day after that, a national department asks for the same information. So we keep on submitting the same things over and over again. And they ask us to please look at what solution the department can come up with. And not only ourselves, but also together with our partners like the Venture Treasury and some of the other big sector departments. And that was how we actually designed and developed the IPS system, where we said, let us for once and for all, pull all the relevant information for municipalities into one space, where everybody can have access to that information. And that was one of our big deliverables for this year. We were able to do that. We have an automated system. We are on every 6 months, we collect information from municipalities, and it goes and it sits in a library. And from that library, then the municipality can access information that they put in there themselves. We have systems and processes in place where we can check the quality of the information, but also the sector department can go in and get information out of that. So we have all the big sector departments with us in this project, Treasury, Environmental Affairs, all the big sector departments, so there is now one library, which means that departments don't have to go and ask the same stuff over, they can go to a central place and just pull it out. So for us that was a big response to a very specific need that the municipalities addressed to us, and we were able to resolve that even to a great extent. In actual fact, we are also making the information available to national departments so that they can pull it through there. And then the last one is just to say what the baseline report was and what did it show us. That was the very first time that we actually published or sent out electronically these new questionnaires to be able to pull the information out of the municipalities. And that was done exactly a year ago in March 2017, and it showed us what is the maturity of municipalities across the different areas, so for infrastructure, for finance, organizational oversight and so on. Chair, and that's definitely a report that we can make available to the committee so that they can need more detail, the detail in the end of exactly where municipalities opportunities.
We will greatly appreciate that. Thank you very much. All right.
I will hand over to the team on the chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. In relation to the assessment of the performance arguments, we have assessed the performance arguments in line with Regulation 805, which talks about the appointment of senior managers of the municipality. What we were actually looking at, Chair, is the alignment between the performance arguments as well as the SDBI3 to ensure that the priorities that have been raised by the communities in their IDPs, they filter through into their performance arguments. So in this exercise, Chair, we have actually found that the municipalities were in compliance with the Regulation 805. So then we could not find any gas as a question that was asked. So all municipalities were in compliance with the regulation 805. The next question, Chair, around indigenous policies. The question is, which municipalities were assessed? The municipalities that were assessed around the indigenous policies were George, Oudtshoorn, Naima, Kamaland, Stellenbosch, Matsikama, Pito, Cedarburg, Drakenstein, Overstrand, Swellendam, Hesekwa, Beaufort West, Lady, and Bredenville municipality. And the assessment that we have done at Chairperson was to ensure that municipalities are actually prioritizing the indigenous policies. COCTA provided us with a guideline where we can assess these indigenous policies. And one of the critical areas that were on this guideline was to make sure that municipalities are including a section whereby they can clearly say how do municipalities graduate from being an indigent, because they cannot be an indigent forever. What strategies do they put forward to ensure that they graduate from being indigent? So, on the question around were there any kind of indigent relief that was provided, there was no kind of indigent relief, Chair, that was provided by COCTA. It was mainly to ensure that municipalities are actually prioritizing the indigent policies and are being implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Son of Warhols.
Okay, on the question of the boreholes, boreholes falls within the mandate of the Department of Water and Sanitation. It's not a local government responsibility. Although, as Minister alluded to earlier, we acknowledge the capacity constraints within the Department of Water and Sanitation, and therefore we've involved in collaborating with Water Affairs in developing a website tool in which municipalities would be able to allow their citizens, their domestic users, to register their boreholes, and also have the capability for them to actually provide us with their water table levels, so that we can, on our desk, all of us in the Western Cape government have access of an overview snapshot of the whole province groundwater levels, how it's moving, how it's dropping, how it's increasing, so that it can serve as an early warning sign that we can warn a municipality and say, listen, your water table is dropping at a rate that's alarming, and you've got to adjust your obstruction regime. In terms of the boreholes that belongs to the municipalities for their own water source, those ones under the disaster declaration, in order to expedite groundwater exploration, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Water Affairs agreed that all boreholes can continue without applying for a water use license. Our geohydrologists are now currently in the process to assist all municipalities to make sure that those boreholes are registered. So that's the question on the boreholes. In terms of the question on desalinization, in terms of the reconciliation study and the order in preference in terms of feasibility for water augmentation in South Africa, we first go for groundwater exploration. Secondly, we would go for wastewater reclamation, and thirdly, we would go for stormwater harvesting, and the final resort would be for desalinization. In towns, especially those towns closer to the coastal areas, groundwater abstraction is sometimes a constraint due to the high salinity content, high salt content of water along the coast.
and therefore we've got only three diesel plants currently considered and in preparation and planning, and that is one in Saldanha municipality at Shirley Point. It's a relatively small one. Then we've got one at Ritsang in Issaquah, where it was a donation from the French embassy. And then the third one we've got is a project that was started by Department of Water and Sanitation in Lambeth Bay. Thank you.
Chair, in terms of your question around back to basics, you'll recall that Ms. Bybach said that we did diagnostic assessments in all 10 municipalities. So when we do the diagnostic assessments, we do it in collaboration with our sector departments, and it's across all the pillars, public participation, service delivery, good governance, sustainable financial management, as well as the institutional capability. We've obviously, because we've done that in around 2015, we've also had to review those municipalities that are still on the Back to Basics program. And subsequently, Minister Kokok has also added three additional areas of focus, which is local economic development, spatial planning, as well as disaster risk reduction. So that remains in terms of the Back to Basics. Now, because you do a diagnostic assessment, you develop a support plan for a municipal-specific support plan. So you will find that in some cases, some municipalities have specific projects in, more projects in some of the pillars than in others, because obviously there's a gap in terms of that specific municipality. So it differs from municipality to municipality in terms of the pillars. But those support plans are available if you want to see what's on the municipal-specific support plan. Then also to the question around the middle management mentoring program. Other than the training that Danielle is responsible for in terms of counsellors and middle management and junior management, we also feel that we need to augment that because training doesn't always give you the results that you want. So mentoring is a good program for especially people who've got the talent in an organisation to be promoted. So we've done a middle management program since 2014-15. In 2014-15, 11 middle managers participated, 2015-16, 9, 2016-17, 12, and in 2017-18, 11. Mentoring, unfortunately, is more costly than training because you need at least 7 months where you allow the mentee to go to a municipality and be mentored by either the municipal manager and some of the Section 56 managers. So that's quite a costly exercise, but we feel we've done quite well with the program. In fact, we've been given feedback that three of the mentees have been promoted since they've attended the middle management mentoring program.
Thank you very much. There's a standing one.
Yes.
Yeah. Communication.
Call them by name.
Thank you, Chair. Your question on social media, I would like to just say that our part of our mandate is also to build capacity and to develop our local communicators because of budget constraints within our local municipalities. So the training that we offer, we identify it in our ComTech structure. We meet quarterly and then we plan for the next year. So the training for this financial year in particular was social media and traditional media training that they requested. The social media training we did in partnership with Department of the Premier's EG4C and we offered in West Coast. So, but it's offered there because our meeting is there, however the whole province is attending. So with the social media training, because it's social media is such a new platform for all the municipalities, or in fact for everyone, we assist them to sort of look at what structures you have to have in place, what the platforms are, how you can use it, and first of all also to get your policies in place to safeguard you and your employees and the municipality. So we teach them the do's and don'ts, the best practices, how to optimize the platform, how to package information and aim it, It's also a public platform, so if they don't own the space, someone else will. So rather own the conversation rather than to hear, oh, this is being said and you can't respond. So this gives them the opportunity to respond immediately, truthfully, on their own platform. And it's also nice because it's reaching a lot of people, it's cost effective. You don't have to pay a lot for, in fact, you don't really have to pay for Facebook. You reach old and young, the youth especially. And also, let's see what I missed out, it's also a great public expression tool because some people are intimidated to speak in meetings, but they're not, you know, they will more openly share their views on a platform such as Facebook. So, yeah, we're just trying to assist them to use the platform as best as possible.
Respond to the question of the research around the executive system.
Thanks, Chief. Chief, with regard to the question pertaining to the executive mail system, I mean, as the ministers alluded to, we got the services of Professor Jaap Visser from the Tulamadu Institute to conduct a study and do a comparative analysis of the executive mail system versus the collective executive system, so that we can look at the advantages, disadvantages of each system. And then obviously also a comparative analysis of case studies in other provinces that have implemented the, for example, the collective executive system. So for instance, the case studies in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, where there's 35 municipalities that currently are utilizing the collective executive system. So based on that, there can be a more informed decision coming through before the elections as to a viable option of a system of governance before the next local government elections. There's another question as well, Chair, relating to the practice notes. I think the response to the practice notes, I just need to say at the outset, the practice notes were done internally. We used the acumen and expertise of our officials within the department. So I'm proud to say that we used the legal skills that we had in the department. Based on the assessment and our interactions with municipalities, we picked up there's a lot of lacuna and gaps in the law. And municipalities require certainty as to what to do in particular practical situations as well. And that's where the guidance comes in on case law and the Constitutional Court as well. So that is basically what the practice notes incorporate. And I will provide a copy of the practice notes to the Standing Committee, so that they can go through the as valuable guide. And it has an impact on municipalities. And I think it's also imperative and important that we do guide municipalities if we want efficient governance by our councils. The next question was on the impacts. The impact assessment, I mean, this is a program that we're covering over the next year or two. I think it's just important, and we think it's important that we need to ensure the functionality and the full operation of the impacts itself. So when we conduct the assessment of the impacts, we're looking at the terms of reference, we're looking at the compositions, we're looking at whether they are going according to the NT guideline as well, on impacts as well. Looking at the challenges, it's only through the interactions and assessments with impact members that we can pick up the challenges as well that they have. What we follow through after that, and it's concurrently running as well, we, as you see under one of the indicators that we got, we conduct impact trainings. So we get other sectors also to come in and assist the impact members relating to the issues that have been identified through the assessments. Pertaining to the question of the assessment of the code of conduct, that indicator, the member indicated 5 versus 2, where we reached the target of 2. One needs to look at that indicator in the context of the powers of the MEC. If you look at the powers of the MEC in terms of the code of conduct, it's only in 2 instances when a code of conduct matter comes through to the MEC. The one is an appeal. So if a councillor is fined, reprimanded or warned, he's got the right to appeal to the MEC within 14 days. That's the one instance. The other instance is when there's a request for removal or a request for suspension. That has to come through to the MEC in terms of the legislation. So those are the instances, and on those 2 occasions, it was related to those 2 type of matters or instances. The one was relating to a removal, and the other one was relating to a fine, and it was an appeal. Thanks.
I guess that's the end of the session. going to Honorable Jandy.
One follow-up or suggestion, Chair, that I want to make for the comment.
Okay, you may bring the suggestion.
Yes, just a concrete suggestion. I am worried about the, because this certainly affects service delivery. I'm worried about the amount it takes to make an appointment. I want to suggest to you, Chairs, the leader of the committee, that we take that recommendation of after this, at some point, to convene a session where your CSC will be part of that, because it means that if I meet a potential talented individual tomorrow who is interested to apply to the provincial government, I must say to that individual, you can apply this year now in October. If you are very lucky, you'll be employed in October 2019, because we have a new benchmark now that we have. Based on what you've just taken us through, with all the things you've tried your best, that it is no longer 6 months. So it takes a year to appoint. You're talking about three directors. Was part of that, you would budget for that. So it means they will always share, they will always be in underspending when they come to us. And so we've got to make that intervention. And it might also mean that what we budget for must take into account that actually you don't budget for everything, because you will be appointing this person after a year. Maybe you budget for advert and other things. So I'm suggesting that we have that session, because this is a worrying thing. It might not apply to this department only. Maybe there are also other departments. But anything between 6 months and a year just to fill a post, it's certainly unacceptable from where I'm sitting. He has explained the dilemma that he has faced and all of that. I certainly think that some form of intervention is needed. And we're parliament, we cannot be concerned about that, unless we're saying this is a rule now, this is a new standard, let's put it in the books. When you apply, you work next week, if you're lucky.
Alright. HOD?
Can I just perhaps add, Chairperson, what we've now approached the provincial president and MP in the HOD, and we have a number of unconnected. So what you're saying, with these savings that we generate on COE, we will now fund those unfunded posts, given the fact that we now understand how long it takes to fill a post. So together with the Treasury, we are negotiating with some interventions and controls to ensure that we minimize the underspending on COE, and that we actually begin to fill some of our vacant posts and manage that process.
All right. What we will do, thanks HOD, what we will do, Honorable Tanji, when we take resolutions, and obviously after the department has recused themselves, we will deal with these matters and see what kind of resolutions in a structured way. We want to assist them. I think that's their intention, so we'll see how we can work together to address that. Before I take the next round, because the next round is going to take us from 51 to 51 to page 82. So before we get to that, just prepare yourselves now, 51 to page 82. I just want to ask broad questions, not necessarily to respond immediately. You can take it there in the next session. The CDWs, the mandate remains the same, or there has been some shift, or have you re-looked at the mandates and found other alternatives to utilize the CDWs differently? I'm asking that question against the backdrop that I noticed that the amount that was planned, that was budgeted, there was an increase from the from the baseline to, it was in fact 52 million to 56 million, just above that. And I also noticed that I'm looking at 26, page 26. And also, I see the number of rows that exist there. I know, for instance, in the overpay, I've not come across a person saying I'm a CDW. I've not met one saying I'm a CDW. Where do these people live? Where do you find them? When there's riots, let me say simple protests. I see what they've been doing here is dealing with the on page 21. I see here they're dealing with community development. They say they supported 70 small scale initiatives aimed at improving access to economic opportunities across the province. So that is more economic development. Is that the original mandate? Now, because ideally, because I meet the ward development, I do meet the ward committee members. In fact, some of the ward committee members, you find them leading protests. Now, the question is, why are these people there? Is it necessary to continue with the with the current trend of training? Is the training working? And some of the elements I know, because I mean, when we were in council a long time ago, you will find that some of them have ambitions, by the way, to become councillors. So they undermine the councillor and then they leave this process and this process. But what can we then do? Excuse me. So that even when they do so, but they don't ban buildings and destroy public property and private property in pursuit of the agendas that exist. Not necessarily them, but in the communities where they lead, how do we utilize them to assist government in that space of public awareness and engaging the communities? So the question here, if you hear Minister and the HOD, I'm trying to find the core mandate of these individuals and whether or not that mandate is being realized given the nature of their positioning. I'll leave that with you, but I will go straight to 51 up to 82. Honorable Simas.
Okay, Chair, I'll kick off where you just ended now, but to summarize that what you just asked, are we getting value for the buck we're spending on the CDWs? Explain what we all want to know, because they will get a lot of art than we see the power of others and the provinces. Chair, on page 65, and I mean, the trend goes on to 66 and ends on 67. There's a number of municipalities that must still submit their annual expenditure report for this program. Is there a specific cut-off date? Because I mean, some municipalities have submitted, some have not. So I'm just trying to figure out. Ek moet nog dink wat die mense gedoen het voor hulle beslag kan neem. Dan sê page 68 en page 69, my question is related to the Municipal Service Delivery and Capacity Building Grant, because when the Standing Committee of Finance said this question also popped up, I just need to ask it here again. There's a number of municipalities that I pick up here that the funds had to roll over. And the question at the Standing Committee of Finance, I'm going to repeat now. A, did these municipalities need to submit a plan for the funds? Did they submit it too late? Did they get, I understand it's the last quarter, but for them to have received it in the last quarter, is there a specific reason why? Because it looked bad when we said to the Finance Committee that, I mean, there's Canaland, there's also things that was flagged, where we know this type of grant would have actually meant a lot. So is the problem on their side? That you, that this department actually only paid out the money during the last quarter. And that's the only questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Simas. No more questions? Honorable Gianji?
This is the 2015 chair that was uncovered by the
On the SOEs, you the issue with the transfer disaster management plan. That's where my curiosity is. So you now have the transfer on what was this was looks like a new good thing. So we're helping SOEs in a disaster. So just help there. Then the next page, page 59. Just help. What do you mean by head induction? What is head induction common on page 59? And then at the bottom there, around the area of fighting and ground support programs, you now have got agreements. Provincial agreement with working on fire and municipal agreement on working on fire. And based on those agreements, are you ready for the fire season that we're approaching? Page 61, from the IDPs, the quality of the IDPs. I want to get into this. So, firstly, you have achieved these targets, 100%. My first question, what is the nature of these targets? What are these targets that we're talking about? Two, given the fact that we're in a drought environment, do your IDPs have got drought chapters in those IDPs? Because those IDPs are supposed to respond to the current challenges. Do they have your water demand, quality of water demand management issues? Because these are things that might not have been there before, but we're faced with those kind of issues. Because you're talking about quality of IDPs. And then, for some reason, you set a target, and you set one target, and you did not achieve that target, but you continue saying it's partially achieved. What do you mean? You've not achieved it. What is this partially achieved? One, it must be, at least there's no, it's one and then there's zero. So, and that is partially achieved. So I really need to understand that. Maybe you can say that to the head of department who's looking for a bonus or the MEC. But to put that in the annual report and you say, our target was one, but what we have achieved is zero, but it's partially achieved. So please explain that. I don't know why it could not have gone to print in the way it is. Let me leave those pages so that I don't. Then, Chair, there's a trend, and Member Simas already started here. And this trend seems to be cutting across. So I'll try and go page by page. I'm on page 65. Besides what Member Simas has said, I'm just curious about, because here I'm suspecting, let me say it upfront, and you must prove me I'm wrong. Here I'm suspecting fiscal dumping from yourself. And I'm going to illustrate why I suspect that. Firstly, Chair, there's a consistent trend where there's money that was allocated across the board in the last quarter. The last quarter is January, February, March. That's your last quarter in terms of our financial year. So there's a template response. On one page, on one section, they'll say the money was transferred in the last quarter. Then the others would say in January, because it's part of the last quarter. So I'm interested Because if you are able to say in January, I don't want, because somebody was sitting on the computer, and just you just feel this thing. There's money that has been kept, has not been transferred, and then now it must happen because end of March, the CFO is saying end of March, by the 10th of March or whatever, this is what we need. And then somebody starts, you're making bank deposits into these areas. So you, at least when you say it was transferred in January, you would have expected that in 2 months' time that money would have been spent if you're not doing fiscal dumping. This is where I am. And there's a trend here about that. And it's big money. Large part of it is on the CW program in all the municipalities. Some have spent by the end of March, some have not. And there are some that have spent huge amounts of money, and I'm asking, especially in the overhead area, where you say you don't see them, but there's money spent there in your tier about the school and all of that. And I'm saying that trend also goes into the your municipal infrastructure issues. That's where they include the template of the last quarter. And I'm just not impressed about that, because I regard that as a template response, and it's not helpful. You either have to specify it was in January or February, and you must explain to us why you deposited or you transferred it in January or February, a month before the end of the financial year. You have got to do explain that to us, because that's what I call fiscal dumping. You're removing the problems from yourself and get it to somebody else. What happens to that is, because your books will look good. That's what you're doing. That's from where I'm sitting. So I'm making that comment because it covers many pages that I was going to go through. So there's quite a similar thing in relation to that. Maybe to... And then from page 75. From page 75 and then also 77, 78 and 79, I'm interested there to find out when they say the amount received is this amount, that's in every page. It's your conditional grant, earmarked funds and received. You've received this amount of money, you then say amount spent by a department, you say that amount. There's a vagueness there. I need you to be very specific to us and indicate how much was allocated or committed vis-a-vis spent. What is the difference between those? Which again goes to, well, the amount transferred is not equal to the amount spent or the amount committed. Let me maybe pause there, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Judge, Honourable Oliphant.
Chair, I know this was explained, but can you again, page 63, just to that last table, there are 10 numbers under 10. Page 63, that table below this, development planning, sub-program expenditure. And maybe with specific reference to the disaster management understanding there. Just again, I might have missed that response. I know there has been a response on this, but I just want to get this a bit clear in my own mind. Then, Chair, the second one is just back of the 52, just in 2.1. This JPI agreement. It indicates, I just want to understand the 25% that you refer to, which sectors does that include, or which of those sectors are part of that 25. Because you also make reference in your general comments that, priorities, some of the departments reprioritize for something different and you are engaging with them. Maybe progress on that. Who else might be coming on board on that program there. Then Chair, just for me, just to take further the questions here, I'm not going to as far as what Member Dan just said, but I just want to understand, for example, if you transfer the money the last quarter, I'm just making one example in cases 9, Saldana Bay, this is for municipal service delivery capacity building. That's a grant for capacity building, that's the purpose for it. So are we saying if we transfer in the last quarter, is this capacity building to take place in that quarter, or are we reimbursing them for what they already did? I'm just not sure, because if you look at the purpose and when you transfer the grant, if it's for capacity building, why do you only transfer in the last quarter of your financial year, which will leave the municipality with about two, three, four months to do whatever capacity building they need to do, if that's the understanding I'm having. And the same with the whole issue of the operational support trust. Maybe that operational says something else to me. It's funding that they must use as part of their operations, but the state is giving it to them at the last quarter. It's just my own thinking. I'm not sure. As I said, maybe I'm not in the department. I might not know, but from what I'm reading, it says it's your operational cost, but we're giving it to the last quarter. So right through the financial year of yours, see what you can do, but I'm giving you the money at the last quarter. It does not sound correct when I looked at it. Then on page 75, Chair, just I see there's a lot of conditional grounds that were given, but I just want to understand the one, it's on page 75, just the three desalination plants in progress. I might have missed it at committee level, but if you just give me a quick indication in which areas are those, where do we find those?
Thank you, Honourable Simas.
Chair, just a quick one. On page 74 under the Municipal Drought Capacity Support Grant, I see Canaland is there. But if I go to 71 to 73 under Municipal Drought Relief Grant, Canaland is not there. Are we actually capacitating them for the future so they can actually learn how to spend the relief grant if they're not going to get one, or what is the reason? Because if I look at the municipalities which got the Municipal Drought Relief Grant, some of them are actually in the central Karoo area, and they're in the same position as Canaland is in, from a drought perspective.
All right, thank you, Honourable Members. It's okay.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to answer the question on the ostensible fiscal dumping and just put that into perspective, and I'll ask my colleagues to answer the balance of the question. There's a particular planning cycle in municipalities, and the majority of the provincial departments participate in that process. And I'm just first going to speak to the planning process. Now we find that municipalities are engaging their communities around the needs and the wants and so on in the IDP process. They consult sector, various sector departments and so on. What is the contribution in terms of the IDP's process? We in the province is running a concurrent process, and we just had recently, about 2 weeks ago, the PGMK, to say what must be in our budgets and what we're going to do in our APPs over the next year and so on. But the fundamental purpose of these two planning and budgeting processes is actually to align it at the end of the day to say what do we do together in municipalities. In addition to that, we ask how can we support municipalities. So by the time that we finalize our budgets and our APPs, municipalities have not finalized their budgets and their IDPs. They didn't consult on the draft IDPs and the draft budgets and so on. But by February, March, early March, our process is complete. So what we do is we negotiate with the provincial treasury, and based on our own assessments, we will say for support, capacity building, for municipalities, we require X million. But we can't actually list that out in a baseline, because we further need to engage municipalities in the MTEC processes, in the time and the science, so that we can have a decent understanding
And also what we call the IPSS reports, where are areas of support, facilitation, our diagnostic reports and so on. So when we finalize the baseline of our budget, that information is not made available, and subsequently we embark on engagements with municipalities to extract that information. So with negotiations and submitting of business plans and then following a due diligence process within the departments together with other sector departments, there is a what we call a departmental committee that then begins to identify where are the requirements or the need for support funding and so on, prioritize those projects and so on. And that entire committee then does what we call a due diligence process. And at the end of the day, they will then submit it and say, these are the processes, we've actually consulted most of the sectors, can the accounting officer then approve this? This we then consult with the provincial treasurer in the adjustment budget process. And if the ministers are in agreement, we then take that through the adjustment budget process, and that money can only be transferred once it has been considered in terms of DORA. We can't transfer the money in advance. So that's why we'll see that the money flows in the last quarter of the financial year. What we also want to do is the funding that we have reprioritized in terms of the budgets for draft and so on, that is also money that actually flowed in the last quarter. We know that the financial year of the municipalities end the 30th of June, so they've got time to spend that money. We are now in consultation with the provincial treasury to say, particularly the capital projects, you can't spend that within the year, given the supply chain process, given the planning and the implementation and so on. And we are now in negotiations to say that you must actually allocate that funding over a 3-year period, so that you don't create administrative burden for municipalities to come back and ask, can we roll over this funding? But we are looking together with the provincial treasury internally how, now already with the next 1920 budget, how with a baseline we can already allocate some of the funding to municipalities so that they can have adequate time to spend that money. So part of it was also that the money became, via our budget, only available through the adjustment budget process. So all the sponsors, chairperson, of these separate grants that have been listed here, have the detail on it, to what extent that transfers have been spent, and we keep record. And at the time, at the front of this, the end of our financial year, when we transferred it, certain parts of those amounts have been spent. But a large amount of those monies that have been transferred have subsequently been spent.
Alright, is that all? Happy? Not happy. After Mr. Diamond. Mr. Diamond, please.
Thank you, Chair. It's three issues. The first one is the Transnet plan. So it is a requirement of the Disaster Management Act that all municipalities, government departments at all levels, and state entities must have a disaster plan. So we have a program whereby we assist one per year. And we look at it in two ways. Is how do we help them to get their plan done, and then how do they help us if we need their resources in a disaster? So Transnet, for example, the transportation of hazardous materials is a very big issue, and there's large volumes of that get transported that could create a major disaster of any nature, explosive, toxic, corrosive, whatever kind of incident. So we assist them in developing plans. We have the capacity, obviously, of getting all the response agencies in to assist and to know who must respond to which points, what will the risks be, etc. Obviously transportation incidents that they might have to deal with. And then what we also did is they were part of our drought task team, so they would have assisted us with the movement of water if we had got to a point where we went into a phase 3 type scenario. So we assist every state-owned enterprise every year, or a provincial government, a national government department, and that's really speaking to that. The HAT is what is known as high altitude training. So when we have fires in high altitude training. So if we have fires, normally, you know, a lot of our wildfires are in mountains, and it's there's a whole lot of risks specifically working in mountains. The air is thinner. There's a lot more risks in terms of the terrain that you're working in. If you do get separated, there's risks around getting lost. There's risks around it getting dark, and there might be problems getting people off the mountain. So all the responders to wildfires before the start of a wildfire season has to get a fire safety certificate, or what we call a fire line safety certificate, as well as do a high altitude induction. So we have specialized high altitude teams that we fly into areas to do specific work, but every single person must also do an induction on working at high altitude, and that's training. Then as far as the fire season is concerned, I think we have put absolutely everything in place that we possibly can. This is a program that we started a while back in putting a maximum response to the kind of wildfire incidents we get. This year we begin contracted 24 aircraft from the province. The city of Cape Town is contracted 2, and the Cape Wonders district is contracted 2. We also have specialized ground teams, as I said, which were able to move by air to different positions to be able to manage these kind of incidents. We've also brought in a process this year from the lessons we learned around the Southern Cape fires, which we're calling our catastrophic fire response. So what will happen is we have a lot of highly technical equipment whereby we can predict fires and the intensity and the size, etc. of fires. We work with the CSIR when it comes to that. So if we do pick up an incident where we see that there is a possibility of a catastrophic fire like we saw, we will then immediately activate a very large resource to be able to respond to an incident. So those systems are all in place. We are expecting a very busy fire season. We have been told that the temperatures this year are going to be exceedingly high, and we are going to get high winds. So we are working on that basis. We normally plan a certain number of flight operations, and that's how we budget. That's how we go to the department, and that's the money that we ask for. It's based on a specific number of flight operations that we have to carry out. Most of the time it becomes more than that. Last year it was less than that. We were expecting a very busy season, obviously, with the drought, and it's just the way that it turned out. We didn't have a very busy season. The previous year, we had 2,000 flight operations throughout the province, where normally we look at about 800. But this past fire season was relatively quiet. I think the CFO will also mention something around that. Thank you.
Mr. Perez, do you want to say something?
Thank you. To the question of the honourable member directly on the quality of the IDP assessments, just to note that the indicator on 61 is the program indicator, and it's linked to the indicator on page 62, which speaks to the assessment process of the IDPs. Now, we particularly looked at the budget linked to the priorities of the IDP in this particular assessment, and that brings the indicated percentage as noted on page 62. However, just to add in relation to your questions on the drought, etc., we don't do our assessments alone, honourable member. We do it in relation to our internal departments and also to our external departments within the Western Cape government. So we've involved the disaster management section as far as the disaster risk assessments, and in relation to the drought assessments done by the municipal infrastructure unit of our department. So all that information was taken into account when we actually did the assessments. So we looked where a municipality was actually listed as a risk for drought, what they have actually done, and that assessment has been done with the loss. There are consolidated assessment reports that are actually freely available, if so be, done from, as I said, most of the departments in the Western Cape government, together with provincial treasury. So there is a consolidated report that we actually do prepare on that. So that's in relation to that. And that will obviously inform, should a municipality need any assistance with the water demand strategies, we then come back to our municipal infrastructure unit to see how they assist with developing those particular strategies for the particular municipalities. So that's the loop we do with the assessment of the IDPs and how it feeds back into the support work that we do going forward, honourable member. Just on your second question, and it's linked also to Member Olympia's question, the program was partially not achieved on page 61, is also then linked to our indicator on page 62, which is 2.1. That's on the joint planning initiatives, as noted by Member Whitfield. And yes, Member, we do actually have the actual departments. What that indicator measures and what we've asked the departments and the municipalities to do is to indicate into their, either the APPs or in the IDPs, these particular initiatives that was agreed to back in 2015, 2016. What has subsequently happened, we've been monitoring it year on year, and there's been good implementation. What subsequently happened with the last financial year was, in certain cases, as you are well aware of, there has been some budget cuts across the provincial sector. But also some departments have actually concluded some projects, which now we need to follow the process of getting them